Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code POOL at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code POOL at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code POOL. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. The big news today is that a reporter for the Washington Post has doxxed the creator behind the popular Twitter account Libs of TikTok. This is an account that criticizes the left and often highlights publicly available posts from these people. It's really interesting that this is considered a bad thing. Like, somebody posts a video on TikTok, somebody else shares it, and they're like, stop sharing it. It's like, you meant for it to be shared. You know, you post it on social media. The interesting thing about this story is that shortly after it was published, there was a major backlash among many on the right, because not only was the name of the person who created the account published, but also their private home address. Now, there's a lot to get into the nuance of what that means, but we here at Timcast, our great reporters, dug through some public records, and sure enough, the address that they linked to was listed as the private residence of the creator of Libs of TikTok. There is a lot to go through there, so let me just stress it. There's more nuance, more context. The Washington Post came out not too long ago, a couple hours ago, I think, saying we never linked to any of their private details, which is the craziest and boldest outright lie, because we have the archival article and it's got the link. I can click the link and show you the address. I'm not going to, but it's remarkable that they think they can just outright lie like this. So, you know what we're going to talk about? You know, the media is dying. CNN Plus, latest update. They laid off. CNN CFO is laid off. Their Discovery apparently is like, this is a flop. Netflix just tanked, like, what, 25% in their stock. What else do we got? We got Jon Stewart's new show, 40,000 viewers. Wow. And here's the best part. Not even viewers. They called it homes. Homes. That means, like, literally no one might be watching Jon Stewart's show. Huh. Get well, go broke, man. So we got that. We've got also in the media, an ethics complaint potentially against Jen Psaki because she's disparaging Fox News while negotiating a contract with MSNBC. Really interesting media stuff here. And then we got some other stuff related to Black Lives Matter. They're accused of what being the reason behind a major spike in murders or something like that.
Big spike.
So we'll talk about all that. Plus, Joe Biden has apparently announced he's going to be running again. It's going to be a wild show. We have a lot to talk about with the Washington Post doxing. This is reporter Taylor Lorenz. Yes, she literally doxed somebody. And it's considered very hypocritical because she recently has said doxing is wrong. So we'll get into the nuance of this. Joining us today is, of course, Jack Posobiec.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard tonight's edition of Timcast.
Promoting your new book, I see.
Promoting my new book. This new book is called Bipillow, and it is written by Bipillow, in conjunction with promo code POST at MyPillow.com. And essentially, it's just every word on the page. On the first page on the left, it says "bi," and on the right, it says "pillow."
Nice.
All the way through the book.
Huh. Is this like your new catchphrase?
Bipillow.
Just it is pretty good. Bipillow.
Bipillow, Tim.
What's the plot of the book?
It's an epic saga.
I don't know, really. Man. It put me to sleep.
Oh.
In many ways. As intended.
Exactly.
The book itself actually is a pillow.
It's a pillow, yeah.
The book itself actually is
a pillow. We also have
functions.
Seamus, I'm back. It was, you know, a wonderful Easter weekend for me. It's great to be back and see all you people. And I'm excited for today's show. At Conspiracy 2.
What's up, everybody? Although I do disagree the media is dying, I think it's transmuting into what we have here
We mean the corporate press.
Metastasizing.
I agree with you there.
Metastasizing.
But I got to say, tonight is the night. The official announcement of the theory of the twisting universe.
Oh.
Up to point, people have believed that the universe is expanding. I think there's better evidence to show that it's actually twisting around on itself.
Did you make this up?
It came to me in a dream, my man. Oh, I've been thinking about this a lot over the last 6 months, and I had a conversation with Michael Malice yesterday that really kind of nailed some pieces in. So I brought a graphic. I'm going to talk about it later in the show.
Were you high?
I don't think so. All right. Well, I mean, I kind of always am. I think it stays in your fat for years or something.
All right. Well, we'll talk about that. Wes got Lydia pressing the
buttons. I am pressing buttons. I'm very excited to hear about the twisting universe theory. I'm curious if it aligns with our donut Earth theory.
Earth is both hollow and flat.
That's right.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is the makers of Twister were onto something.
Yes.
They were tapping into the very fabric of space-time.
Ooh, oh, you're ripping me apart with your ideas.
There you go.
Red.
All right.
Anyway. Well, let's talk red.
Let's stop having fun and talk about serious stuff, I guess.
Oh, great.
No, I'm kidding. We'll have fun. Before we get started, my friends, head over to TinCast.com. Become a member because we are going to have a members-only segment coming up for you just after the show. But more importantly, as a member, you are funding the reporting we do. And this morning, this is a big part of the story. This morning, when the story came out, the narrative among, you know, journalists and politicos and commentators was that this reporter from the Washington Post had revealed the name of this creator. Of course, the original article actually did dox the address of the creator. We did some digging here at TimCast.com and found through public record searches. I wouldn't call it difficult, but I wouldn't call it easy. There's easy, you know, public record search, then there's like medium, a little bit more than normal. But we did discover that the address they posted and then quickly removed was the private home address of the creator. I bring this up now because we're going to get into it. But if you really do respect the reporting we're doing and challenging the lies and the manipulations, then we need your support as members because that's how we fund our reporters and we have on the ground reporters. We do not sell stories. We don't make money off the stories. We cross our fingers and hope that you believe in us enough and respect the news that we report so that you'll become a member and help us make more. It's a pay what you will model and it's a risky business model, but I think it's the right business model because I don't want to hide important information or put explosive details like this behind paywalls. So we just do bonus segments as a sort of, you know, extra. So become a member. Don't forget to smash that like button. Subscribe to this channel. Share the show. We already have more daily active users than CNN, but alas, it is now being reported that CNN actually does have 150,000 subscribers, so they're definitely bigger than us. But with your help, sharing this video will be bigger than them at that point as well. Let's read this first story from TimCast.com. Washington Post publishes home address of popular critic of left, libs of TikTok. Reporter Taylor Lorenz has previously claimed to suffer from PTSD from being doxxed in a similar way. Now, I want to show you a little bit here, and I got to explain a lot of the nuance. All right. They say in an article by a technology reporter at the Washington Post provided the home address of the creator of the Libs of TikTok Twitter account. In an article meant to expose the person behind the popular account, reporter Taylor Lorenz linked to a critical piece of information that disclosed the private home address of the person running Libs of TikTok. After the ensuing backlash, the Post removed the link. TimCast confirmed that the address published is documented as the creator's private home address. Now, I will say we were all in the newsroom going over this, investigating details. Everybody kind of contributed to working on this story. And we did end up pulling public records, which confirmed the original story published by the Washington Post contained a link to two different links to two addresses. One address was the address of the creator of Libs of TikTok. The other address was the address of family members. Now, here's the challenge. If I pull up the archive to prove they're lying about this, it will expose the name of the creator of Libs of TikTok, which I don't want to do. Well, I suppose we have no choice.
Well, it's kind of like showing cuties to talk about how bad cuties is.
No, look. The Washington Post published a lie. Should we show their lie and prove them lying?
I don't think we should show the address.
Well, I think you can show...
No, not the address.
Oh, okay. No. You can show the... Oh, wait. Is it in the screenshot?
In the tweet from the Washington Post where they lie.
Right.
They use the name of the creator of Libs of TikTok. Mm. Right. And there lies.
That's a tough one. You can at least show the... I believe the screenshot of the original article, which shows the hyperlink.
It
still has the name there. See, they put the name they put the name everywhere. This is on purpose, by the way.
I think
this is by design.
I think it's silly for us at this point to be like, people can't find the name.
Yeah, exactly.
Anybody can look at my Twitter account right now and Washington Post is tweeting.
I think we don't need to show it. People believe us. If you really don't believe us, go search for it yourself.
I think we're being ridiculous at this point to be like, oh, we're not going to say the name, even though literally it's all over Twitter everywhere. It's trending.
Well, even Steven Crowder mentioned it on his
Eric Charamella. Yeah.
Crowder did say the name of the creator.
Yeah, he did.
Well, then we're gonna go with it.
Yeah, shouldn't be an issue.
So we have this from Christine Karate Kelly, statement from Cameron Barr, re-reporting from Taylor Lorenz. They said Taylor Lorenz is an accomplished and diligent journalist whose reporting methods comport entirely with the Washington Post's professional standards. Chaya Rychik, in her management of the Libs of TikTok Twitter account and in media interviews, has had significant impact on public discourse, and her identity had become public knowledge on social media. We did not publish or link to any details about her personal life. Cameron Barr, senior managing editor of the Washington Post. Tim Pool can confirm that is a lie. I tweeted, this is the game they play. Effing evil people as evil as they come. There's the archive. There's your proof. Sorry to libs of TikTok for dealing with this, but WAPO needs to be exposed and proven to be liars. Mm. Here is the archive of the first version of their story. And I'm going to read it. It is archive.ph/B, lowercase e, capital V. I believe that's an L, lowercase L, and lowercase O. And they linked to right here. If I click that right now, it will show you the address of libs of TikTok. We pulled up private, we pulled up public records. It was a paid public records search, a little bit deeper than you normally go, and confirmed this is documented as the private home residence of the creator of libs of TikTok. I apologize that we've come to this point. Have you seen the price of gold lately? It's hitting all time highs. And when it comes to investing in gold, check out Noble Gold Investments. They have a track record of excellence that's second to none. Just look at their thousands of five-star reviews on Trustpilot, Google, and the Better Business Bureau. Customers rave about their knowledgeable staff, smooth investment process, and life-changing results, which you can see for yourself online. That's the kind of reputation you can count on. But it's not just about the reviews. Noble Gold Investments truly care about their clients. They take the time to understand your unique needs and goals, and they give expert guidance every step of the way. That level of personalized service is rare in this industry. Look, when it comes to securing your financial future, you can't afford to take chances. Go with the gold company that has earned the trust of countless investors. Visit noblegoldinvestments.com/Tim Pool today and discover why Noble Gold Investments is the only choice for smart, secure gold investments. Or give them a call at 877-646-5347. Again, that number is 877-646-5347. We had deep ethical conundrums and debates in the newsroom about whether or not we expose the Washington Post for having done this, because we're effectively amplifying their docs by doing so. But I said, anything that happens at this point is on the Washington Post. Anything bad that happens is on them. And we need to call it out, because if we say nothing, they are not held to account for having done it. That being said, it is possible. This is no longer the current address of the individual. There's other issues at play. But they also published another address, which is the, we believe, based on the reporting that we've done, is the family address of the individual. Now you're crossing the line. For what reason did they have to do that? Now, I reached out to Taylor Lorenz and said, we can confirm you published the private home address of the creator of Libs of TikTok. Do you have a comment? To which she responded, I did not.
So she's saying she posted a link to it, and that's the hill they're going to die on? They're saying it's not the same?
That all she was, I did not.
No, because in the statement, it says link.
Right.
It says we did not link to. So in the statement from Taylor to you, she's saying I did not publish. In the statement from the Washington Post, which came out like 12 hours after the actual article itself went live, they claim they did not link after they themselves positively went into the archive, removed the link, which we can only now see in the archive version.
That's right. So they're lying about doing it. Mm-hmm. Taylor is lying about doing it. I suppose her only argument is that she doesn't believe it's the private home address. But I'm sorry. How would she know that? Did she actually? I asked her. I didn't just ask, you know, why did you do this? I sent a comment, and because, like, I got to be honest, I'll give Taylor this respect. She responds every time there's been an issue. She's responded. She's actually corrected things before, so I can respect that. And I said, we're going to be publishing the story. I can confirm you published the private home address of the creator of Libs of TikTok. I asked two questions. Why was the link removed? And did you check the address in the link you posted before publishing it? And her response was, I did not publish the private home address, and then directed me to Washington Post PR. If that's the only thing she has to say, I can only respond with, that is an incorrect statement, outright falsifiable, because I'm not going to publish the documents that we have because it's a paid search. You can dig up public records that are not. I'll put it this way.
Well,
it's publicly available, but it's through like a paid investigative service. to get these records. Like, you'd have to go and physically, like, ask and do something.
Like, go to the county or something.
We got them. We're not going to publish them. But I can say it's a statement of fact. Washington Post did publish the private home address of Libs of TikTok.
Is her contention, because this has to do with the fact that Libs, I guess, was a real estate salesperson and that this was the registered address of her as a business entity working as a realist, working in real estate sales. Well, and so Taylor's trying to hide behind
Even if that's the case, what is the good in publishing that? Why would you have any reason to do so in order to do an expose on somebody?
Well, it's at the very least.
I'm just trying to understand.
But I want to make sure we get to the real nuance here, the real context. The link they published was a real estate license, which had the address of an LLC.
Right.
However, the address used by the LLC is actually a split building with multiple apartments and a storefront. On Google Maps, the storefront is a salon. So I said, okay, well, wait a minute. It is common for people to use their own address for their LLCs.
Yeah, all the time.
Regardless of whatever reason, I have no idea why there's other employees listed within the LLC at that address. We did the record search, and it is listed in public records as a private residence of this individual. So that's on the Washington Post. If they would like to explain that, feel free to. As it stands right now, we pulled public records. It's a private home address, and they published the address. Anyone else can do it, and anything that happens at this point is on the Washington Post for doing it.
I've got to point out some I guess, nuance, because posting something and posting a link to something are different as a social media administrator. And if someone posts something illegal, they go to jail. If someone posts a link to it, they're allowed to.
Not true.
Well, it is as an admin. You remove the original piece, but you don't hammer everyone that retweeted it. That's insane
We're not talking about sharing a post. We're talking about them taking the link to the address and putting it in the article.
Was this not already public information?
So the name of the individual is not public.
So they put some pieces together?
So if no one knows the name of the person, then it doesn't matter what is public. If you then say, here's their name, and here's a link to their address. You've doxed them. You've published your address. And I got to be honest, that is the nuclear bomb of doxing.
But
they're trying to argue this is not doxing. When you post their name and then with a link next to it saying, here's their home address, you've doxed them.
Is that illegal?
No.
No, maybe it should be in the 21st century.
Free speech.
The thing that I think we do need to add, though, is that the Washington Post is not the one that did all this work. And Taylor Lorenz is certainly not the one who did all this work. She's piggybacking off of work that was done by pro-Antifa accounts over the weekend, people that have been doxing online accounts on the right and conservatives for years with ongoing harassment campaigns, some of which, by the way, we're starting to hear may receive foreign government funding.
Well, wow. What is very much ignored by this is that Taylor Lorenz did receive information from activists, published it as if it was her story, and used the Washington Post. Matthew Iglesias of Vox.com, which is a left-wing publication, he's no longer with them anymore, but he's one of the founders, but then he left. He said, you had a great take. He said, this article is basically framed as Libs of TikTok bad, but then it provides you with no real thesis or argument as to why that's the case.
It's basically
activism masquerading as news.
Yes.
Yeah, there is no story. He said it turns out the crux of the story, who is this person? Turns out she's a random crank of no public notoriety. So why was that relevant?
This is, do you remember when they doxed, I think it was BuzzFeed doxed Carpe Diem?
Oh, yeah.
And they said, oh, the pro-Trump meme maker. And they found that he's a stay-at-home father of four who lives in Kansas City. He's just like a regular... Well, yeah. Guy who raises his kids and makes memes, as opposed to Seamus, who raises other people's children.
What?
thank you for, by the way, for that.
But
lift them up, Seamus.
What do you mean?
All the children of Earth.
Oh,
I gotta pull something up real quick. When you go to the SPJ ethics code, and I think I'm gonna have to shrink this so you can see it. There we go. You can see minimize harm in large black bold letters, and it says. Recognize that legal access to information differs from an ethical justification to publish or broadcast it.
Here we go.
This is the Society for Professional Journalists Standard of Ethics. Now, there's others. There's Reuters. I think the AP has theirs, but this is SPJ, which is what they teach you in schools. And the point being brought up here is you minimize harm. within minimize harm, they literally say, just because information may be public or you have legal access to it, doesn't mean you should broadcast it, which is the challenge we had in our newsroom, because we're like, we can confirm this is a private home address, but do we push that out? Because that'll potentially cause harm.
You know, this is the,
it was a coin toss for us. We ultimately decided that the public's right to know what major corporations are doing with the power of billionaires outweighed the potential harms, because the harm of not exposing this was greater than the harms to the individual. So with that, you know, I apologize to libs of TikTok for being caught up in this, but we are not the ones who posted the address.
It's a tough one, because do you expose Medusa to the crowd to show them that it's Medusa? Because if they see it, they'll turn to stone.
Well, I mean, and what are they exposing? This person makes videos on the internet that make fun of other people. In fact, they're not even doing that. They're just posting other things that people have said, which were already ridiculous in and of themselves.
There would be a story.
There
would be a story if there were some, I don't know, funded effort behind this that was being obfuscated, or if there were some nefarious, you know, organization behind the libs, something like that. But there's no story here. There's no story whatsoever.
This is the point I brought up earlier. What is served by saying the two words that is the private name of the individual? Nothing. Now, the story could be the person running the account was at January 6th, as reported. I think that's new. I think it's relevant. Interesting. What are the motivations of this person?
Right.
The opinions of the individual. Also, oh, okay, so this person also said these things. That's relevant. But you can tell that story without saying their name. Saying the name only serves to maximize potential harm.
Well, so what I was going to say, this is the opposite argument that you hear in that came up in the Ketanji Brown Jackson hearings when she was talking about some of the decisions and article she had written when she was in law school regarding sex offender registries. And the idea being that if you make a mistake once in your life, it shouldn't follow you for the rest of your life forever. So the idea was to minimize harm to potential sex offenders or to convicted sex offenders, that over time you would be able to reduce the amount of time essentially that you would appear in the registry. That's the exact argument that was being made for sex offenders, right? Versus this one, which is minimize harm completely for just the subjects of journalism. So Taylor Wren's, right, is maximizing harm to someone who runs an aggregator of, again, public videos that are already out there, videos that, again, that are made to be shared. And obviously it's not hypocrisy, it's hierarchy. That's kind of the main thing, the main thrust of all this, because we can say all day long that, oh, it's hypocrisy. You're exposing, you're writing, you're doing all this stuff, but it's not hypocrisy. It's hierarchy. They're allowed to do it. Taylor Lorenz is allowed to do it. Because she is of the anointed class. She is of the upper class. She is of the aristocracy. And the fact of the matter is that because Libs of TikTok was not anointed, she didn't go to the right school, she didn't get the right credentials, she was doing this unauthorized, then she's not allowed to. Because keep in mind, Taylor Lorenz used to be a TikTok journalist herself.
Yep.
And she would go in specifically posting videos from Kellyanne Conway's 13-year-old daughter and all sorts of other people across TikTok and Instagram. Nice. And she was doxing Pamela Geller's daughters at the same time. This is what she did. And at the end of the day, Taylor Lorenz is jealous that Libs of TikTok was able to become more influential and more effective and do more long-lasting reporting just from looking at TikTok videos than Taylor Lorenz will ever do in her entire life.
You said earlier that there was like foreign actors potentially involved with activist groups that are working
in the doxing. Yeah.
Is that confirmed, or is this just stuff you've heard?
It is confirmed.
Do you have evidence? I mean, is there evidence around that we can pull up, or is it something
we
more,
should wait until we have the bigger story, the release and evidence? Cause I don't want to get into.
Yeah. It's not research on there.
I like pulling up sources for this.
Is a rabbit hole, but the idea is that the person who conducted the initial docs is actually receiving funding from foreign governments.
Interesting.
Well, we've talked about this before. The Washington Post is not exactly the most reputable and responsible publication out there. So I'm sure you all remember that these are the people who spread the mistruths about Nick Sandman. And part of why I'm bringing that up right now is because even though you mentioned it isn't necessarily illegal for them to link to the information they link to, we could all agree it's extremely irresponsible. And when you looked at the Nick Sandman case, there's sort of a similar situation where they made the entire country hate this kid. And then in the name of the story, the Covington school kids, they told you where he went to school. Mm-hmm. So it would be very easy for someone to find and hurt him and the people he was with based on that information.
And he sued them into oblivion.
Yeah.
Did he sue Washington Post too?
I believe he sued Washington Post and attempted to sue CNN, but I can double check.
Let's talk about why this is happening. So we have the story from the New York Post. Jon Stewart's new show on Apple TV is reportedly a flop. Well, what happened? Jon Stewart got woke, went broke. Look at Bill Maher. Bill Maher has been resisting and trying to pull back, but still pretty much playing the establishment game. But he's been calling out wokeness, and he's sort of maintained an audience. He's also never retired. Jon Stewart tried to make a comeback. Smack talks white people, and the problem with white people gets panned for it. And you know what I think? I think most of you watching used to watch Jon Stewart. I used to watch Jon Stewart. Now I see him come back, get woke, go broke. So let's talk about this. We were just talking about libs of TikTok. What is libs of TikTok? Well, the reality is it was an aggregator. It was a lens that was aggregating the woke left, the insane things they say and do, and presenting them in a feed. This was a powerful tool in the culture war, showing regular people what was going on. It resulted in outrage among parents. It resulted potentially in laws getting passed. Now, why would they try to target the individual and try and destroy their lives? Because wokeness is not popular and it cannot win without brute force trying to destroy. When Jon Stewart tries to get woke, it fails. That's what they say. Get woke, go broke, right? So they have to, like, this is the funny thing. If someone is showing people what woke people are like, they have to shut it down. They're like, no, don't. Well, because people are mocking it. But Jon Stewart's version of being woke was meant to be a serious, prominent personality trying to get you to believe in woke things, and it's not working.
No, I remember one of the first things he came out against was calling Harry Potter anti-Semitic. And then he went on this whole sort of like retconning of that, where he actually went in and had them change the video title on the YouTube card in order to, because it originally said,
that's right,
anti-Semitism,
goblins.
Right, the goblins, anti-Semitism in Harry Potter. And then he changed it to just anti-Semitic tropes. And he said, no, I wasn't saying that Harry Potter was anti-Semitic. I was just saying that these tropes show up inside of Harry Potter. See, it's totally different. He doesn't know how to be woke, basically.
He's saying the wizard himself character.
Yes.
Is not.
He's like, I think he's a great wizard. I'd even say a grand wizard, that Harry Potter. But I wasn't calling him racist in any way.
Oh,
there has kind of been a lot of Jon Stewart worship for some bizarre reason over the past couple of years. And I think that's because when comparing him to John Oliver or Trevor Noah, he's significantly less funny. But I've heard a lot of people say things like, when Jon Stewart was the person making informational left-wing comedy, it was all fantastic. But I gotta be honest, he very much did the clown nose on, clown nose off thing that we've sometimes complained about. I remember he was getting into an argument with Tucker Carlson a couple years ago, and it was on Crossfire, that's right, and it was a viral clip, and he's going on about all this misinformation Carlson is spreading, and Tucker says, well, you've spread a lot of misinformation on your show, and his response is, it's a comedy show. And I'm sorry, but when you're presenting yourself as a comedy show that spreads information to help keep people informed, you don't get to fall back on, I was just kidding, when you get the facts wrong.
So we did an episode about a year ago when Luke was here, and he and I got into it over this,
really?
Jon Stewart. If you guys remember that. You weren't here that night, but I think you three were.
Oh, yeah.
And I was essentially making this argument, and Luke was saying, oh, but he had on Ron Paul, and he did some of these other things. And I said, look, no, he was the leading edge of that. Mm-hmm. He was always the leading edge of the weaponization of comedy, and now it's gone far beyond the seeds that he initially sowed in those
years. I can agree. You know, I think it's silly to look back and try to romanticize the era of Jon Stewart, but he praised Project Veritas. And this is a really good example of, at the bare minimum, of how things were different. He mocked James O'Keefe for wearing a silly outfit, but that's fine. You know, he was taking jabs at James for dressing up the way he did. And it was actually like the normal clothes James was wearing. I forgot what he said. But what did he call it? I don't know. But he basically was like, journalists, where are you? How are you getting scooped by these guys? Which is, you know, he showed the Acorn reporting legitimately, like, look at this. And he didn't call James O'Keefe a liar. He didn't say it was deceptively edited. He said, wow, look what these guys accomplished. At the very least, you have that. Now we're in the media age where Trump gets not a single good day, where everything James O'Keefe does is deceptively edited.
But has Jon Stewart done that lately?
Well, no. Jon Stewart
has
came
he shared,
woke.
Has
out
he
woke.
Shared a Project Veritas story?
He was retired
in the last
for several
years.
He comes back now, woke and broke.
He came out,
not literally broke, figuratively broke.
Yeah, my point is, he's that leading edge. He's still that leading edge.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to say, I know you were going to say something, but I just want to drop this in there first before we potentially shift to something else. It's not to say that Jon Stewart's been wrong about everything he's ever done or everything he's ever said. It's just that, like you said, he was on the leading edge of all of this. And whenever somebody comes out and says something even remotely sensible, conservatives go, oh, this guy gets it. He's great. He's our guy
now. Conservatives need
and
to stop doing that.
Yeah, it's really frustrating.
Stop.
Yeah,
Bill Maher.
Yeah, I was going to bring up when Stewart went on the...
Jack Dorsey.
Was it the Tonight Show with Stephen Colbert? Is that he does a Tonight Show now? And was talking about the coronavirus and the Wuhan laboratory of bat coronaviruses across the street from the market where they told us they found the bat coronavirus.
Right. The Hershey chocolate spill.
Most sensible, aware, normal human observation. I was like, good, Jon Stewart's still
which
normal.
Which we all had within like 1 week or even 1 day of hearing about the Wuhan lab. We said, oh, there's a coronavirus right across the street from a virus factory.
I know. It's hysterical that saying that it's possible that the virus that originated right outside of a virus factory, it was insane to say maybe that came from the virus factory, and it was sensible to say that it mutated in a bat and then someone ate the soup at a wet market and that's
racist.
How it all happened.
Exactly.
Now, when Jon Stewart came out, semi out of retirement, disheveled and on Colbert saying all of these things, we were like, Jon Stewart's back. He's going to call out the media for being dumb. And then what did he do? Got up on his show and said, the problem with white people.
Right.
And we were like, oh, here we go.
The anti-Semitism of
what
Harry Potter.
What happened? I've never heard him use that language before.
I'll tell you what. Here's what I think. Bill Maher on his show, he saw the tides because he was sitting in it. He saw people tweeting him. He probably talked to people and they were like, dude, you're getting these things wrong. And he was like, but those are conservative things. And they're like, listen, and he probably went, hmm. So Bill Maher, I think, is trying to play both sides. Call out the woke because the woke goes too far, but don't actually entertain the fact the left is so far gone that Bill Maher is conservative by today's... Like, if they call me a conservative, Bill Maher is to the right of me on a bunch of things. But I think Bill Maher recognized that, and so he's like, I'm going to call out the woke a little bit. Jon Stewart comes back from his semi-retirement, and he's like, okay, what am I doing? And they're like, here's what's happening if you want to be a liberal guy. And he went, I'll just say whatever I have to say to be relevant. And so he was like, okay, what's that? People don't like white people. Let's do a show about it. And then sure enough, it turns out people actually don't like any of that stuff. They don't like what Jon Stewart's presenting on. I think a really good example to understand the blue checks are wrong and crazy is that when the mask mandate was ended, all these videos emerge of people celebrating.
Right.
There's a video of a flight attendant singing and dancing with a garbage bag.
Because
everyone throws they're throwing their masks in. And I'm like, everybody hated that. Except for blue checkmark journalists who are like, you should sue Delta if they make you take your mask off.
Did you, if you go in on the tweet about the DC Metro has taken it off, but then a buddy of mine who rides it pretty regularly says they don't really enforce it anyway. He said he was on it once and somebody wasn't wearing it. And then someone said something to like the Metro guy who was on there and said, hey, this guy doesn't have his mask on. The Metro guy was like, I'm not a cop, man. What do you want me to do? And I said, well, neither are the flight attendants, right? And also, it wasn't a law to begin with. But if you go and look at the tweet from the DC Metro, and Marina Medvin had posted this, and she was screenshotting all the quote tweets over the DC Metro rescinding the mask mandate. And all they're saying, by the way, is it's optional, right? It's optional to wear, which, by the way, if you go to Asia, China, South Korea, Japan, mask wearing, if you're sick, is pretty normal. It's pretty normalized. It's always been around, certainly since they dealt with SARS and avian flu and some of the other things. But with this one, people were freaking out. And then G Prime had a really good tweet this morning about it where he said, just imagine, if you will, you're mid-flight in a flying coffin.
Oh my gosh, surrounded. Yeah, did you see?
The voice comes over the intercom. They start taking the masks off.
That guy who
said.
And
now you're being spreaded by the plague. And the worst thing of all.
The guy
smiling.
The guy who tweeted, what did he tweet? That I was on a plane with their masks off. This is MAGA air or something like that.
Oh my God.
This is MAGA airspace.
Yes. And then a journalist reached out to him.
From the New York Times.
Yep.
Was like, can you tell me about your experience? He's like, well, it was satire, but something only a journalist would have believed.
Right.
I saw that.
I hope she wins a Pulitzer.
That G Prime image of the plane. I didn't know who it was or what it was. And I thought, oh, this is some whacked out journalist that hates the mandates were lifted. I was like, wow, this is trash propaganda. And then I saw the name and my entire perception of the image changed. So at some point, maybe we should put satire above things that are satire.
You're
so
starting to
know
sound like Snopes.
I thought if his name wasn't on that, I would have thought it was some some more, like somebody that was all that hated the lifting the requirements and wanted masks.
Look, I gotta say, you need to be training. You need to be putting on speed. These people will chase you five or six at a time. You might have to run away from them screaming. If you go anywhere near a Whole Foods, if you go anywhere near a supermarket, airports, they congregate in these spaces, Ian. I'm telling you, they will swarm. And if two or three of them scurry away from you, right, when they see you unmasked in the aisle, keep up your situational awareness, maintain your guard and your psychic defenses at all times because they could be returning with numbers.
Okay.
My. Frightening people. No, let's I gotta be about, honest. Hold on. The G Prime, I thought the G Prime comic was hysterical. He's been so on this good. Kick where he tries to create these like very intentionally banal left wing comics. His whole idea is he's trying to like get into the head of a New York Times cartoonist and they're really funny. He does a very good job
with
that.
The problem I'm having with satire, and this is why I dislike Stephen Colbert for so long with his old show, his satire show, is that there's so much lying going on right now in the universe that I need honesty and I can't. If the people I trust start saying things that aren't true just for an effect, I gotta disengage. I can't listen to that stuff or respect it.
Interesting.
Let's talk about CNN, my friends. We have this story from Axios. CNN Plus looks doomed. Where should we get the cake from?
Yeah.
You know, and when's the party? Sunday. Yeah. Sunday. No, for real.
Maybe we can get Chris Wallace to bake it for us.
All right, here's the story, my friends. From Axios, they say Warner Brothers Discovery has suspended all external marketing spend for CNN Plus and has laid off CNN's longtime chief financial officer as it weighs what to do with the subscription streaming service moving forward. Now hold on. Wow. Everybody was saying they had 10,000 subscribers. No, they had 10,000 daily active users. Axios says they have 150,000 subscribers so far. Let me just put that in some numbers for you. If they're getting between $3 and $6, we're looking at between, you know, like what, around 8 million maybe they're making per month. Now they spent, I think, $250 million to set it up. So they're deep in the hole and not going to recover that anytime soon. Certainly not as much as they thought it would be, but still a lot of money. Mm. That being said, my friends, if you think we're better than them, please go to timcast.com. Become members because we should have more than that. We don't. But we should. But it's all growth. The more members we get, the more people we hire, the bigger we get. CNN Plus should not be doing as well as they're doing. They are, of course. They're still doing so abysmally bad, they're probably going to get nuked.
Do you see the bottom line of that right there? Sources say a plan is being considered to replace Chris Cuomo's 9 p.m. Eastern primetime slot with a live newscast, and I love how they describe this, newscast, instead of a personality-driven perspective programming.
Wow.
Good.
Wow. Yeah.
Perspective programming.
We thought about that too here at Timcast. We were like, why have this Tim Pool guy host a show with conversation? Let's just hire Chris Cuomo and have him, talk to people. That would make way more sense.
I would love to have Chris Cuomo on if he was like actually talking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
This sense, so Warner Brothers owns CNN. They're just basically pumping massive amounts of marketing into it to get 100,000 people to subscribe to their thing. But I mean, is that indicates nothing to whether or not it's good or valuable?
Yeah,
it's
not good.
Sorry.
The issue isn't the 150,000 subs. It's that only 10,000 people on average use it per day, which is like per day. That's 24 hours. So think about that. In 24 hours, about 400, every hour, about 400 people or so. Is that right?
That's like an average Telegram chat room, kind of thing. I mean, I actually do think I have more people in my Telegram chat actively on a regular basis than that. And I know I do not market or pay for anything.
I would like to see the ratio of other companies that have subscription models, like how many subscribers Timcast has versus how many people land on it every day. Same with Netflix.
But that's apples to oranges.
Well, you get an idea of the ratio of how many people actually pay for it and how many people actually watch it. And that number is pretty important.
Yeah. I was going to mention this earlier. I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but I still don't understand how CNN saw that they were doing abysmally in the ratings and thought, you know what? We're going to get people to pay for this.
Yeah.
Why would anyone
more
be willing to subscribe?
Stuff you don't
I mean, like,
watch.
Yeah, it's like it's free at the airport. That's why people watch it.
Not anymore.
Yeah, they've been at the airports for a while.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
so that's all right. Well, maybe that's why they're doing so poorly.
I'll tell you what happened is they had a meeting, and this is my opinion, and went, hey, why are our ratings so bad among millennials? And some marketing guy was like, because millennials are watching streaming services. And they were like, if we launch a streaming service, we'll get millennials. I'll tell you, I bet the real issue is that of those 150 subscribers, it's like 149 people who are 55 or older.
You know what this is like? This is like Quibi. You remember Quibi?
Yeah.
That thing that was around for like 5 minutes.
Microsoft.
But somehow got the Reno 911.
It's like a Microsoft streaming.
So the idea was that it was micro streaming. So they're like, hey, what if, and they had like these short Reno 911 episodes, which are actually pretty good, but they would only give you a little bit of it. So it was like, what do people love? Well, they love being on their phones. And what else did they love? They love short videos. So let's make a company that's all about programmed, scripted short videos and deliver it to your phone. It was a complete failure. Nobody liked it because that's not organic social media content, right? People want either like live form stuff like this, not scripted, direct interaction, actual human engagement with, you know, like actual humans. Obviously Ian is, you know, kind of
a robot,
questionable in that sense. But you know, we accept you as you are. And,
thanks, Jack.
And it was just an abysmal failure because again, that was Jeffrey Katzenberg, by the way, was behind that. The former DreamWorks and Disney guy who you could tell had some meeting and say like, what did the kids like today? Oh, stream video? Let's do that. But on the phone, it'll be great.
Yeah, I thought Microsoft it's a direct, invested in that. I could be wrong about that.
The reality was that nobody likes CNN.
Yes.
That CNN was like, maybe the issue is that we're not in the right place. And now they're probably, you know, I hope they cried. I hope someone at CNN like sat there and was just like,
I thought that if we made an app, they'd watch. But they really just don't like us. That's a good point, Jack. The modern media now, the whole like one way media stream is kind of, that's what's dying off. It's turning into a two way thing. If you can't talk to your subscribers and vice versa, then it's, no one wants.
I actually had a really,
I don't think that it's just that it's one way or two way. I agree that that could have something to do with it, but it's also the fact that they're an unreliable network. They report garbage. They don't have an interesting perspective that anyone wants to hear.
That's a good point. Cause Netflix is one way for the most part and they're flying, you know, that's what
had an excellent
Netflix is not fine. They're just
no flying.
No,
I
yeah,
said.
They tanked today.
Oh, yeah, they tanked massively.
Did anyone figure out why
they're losing
was?
Subscribers?
What's happening?
They're losing.
They're all going to CNN Plus.
Yeah.
Here we go. How are we going to compete?
Oh, it's taxed because they can't afford taxes, so people are cutting their subscriptions probably.
No, they're probably moving. We'll get to that in a second, but
I wanted to throw up a really good text in that kind of actually from a buddy of mine who shall remain nameless right now. But a guy I used to work with in my old job, if that makes any sense. And it said they had to lift the airline mandates because it was becoming too obvious that only LA, New York City, and the capital city still care about COVID. The rest of the country has moved on to gas prices and food shortages, and .gov employees are still worried about the flu. Their distance from their subjects has become so far that to convince them that it is still a democracy, they needed to drop the mandate.
Democracy.
For democracy, folks. Yeah. For democracy.
But the weird thing is to still see these blue check journalists be like, everyone, we should start suing the airlines.
Right.
I know, for what?
Because they're like, you agreed there would be masks when I got on this plane and now you're taking them off. And it's like, well, that was the government.
Yo, I looked up Netflix stock, the first story. Netflix loses subscribers. Thanks. From CNN. Hmm. Their new competitor.
Ooh.
Interesting.
Yeah. So what were we talking about? Masks?
Something.
Yeah, what we were going to talk about, why, you know, where we think the subscribers are going from Netflix.
And them lifting the mandates.
And then I was talking about masks.
Yeah, we were talking about masks.
So the Biden administration, by the way, this just broke before the show went live. The Biden administration has announced that right now, in a midterm election year, they are actually going to be fighting to reinstate the mask mandates.
Oh yeah,
really?
No.
That's
in
so
in federal court.
So we have people who are actively calling for, that's what we're talking about, suing airlines because the mask mandates got lifted. This all comes together. You were mentioning being out of touch with their subjects.
Right.
The CNN is in line with this narrative on Twitter, which exists among like 3% of the population. That when the masks come off, everyone's screaming and cheering, but CNN is on the side of like, this is really bad, you know?
Right.
People should be upset by this, and regular people are like, why would I watch your show? That does not relate to me. Who cares?
Well, I don't know. I think people not wearing masks is a threat to our democracy.
How so?
See that?
I think CNN perspective, democracy, we need an unelected bureaucratic doctor who's never, you know, been elected to dog catcher in his life to be making decisions for all 315 million
Thank
Americans.
You. Is that Fauci?
Someone who, a bespeckled, you know, elfish elderly man. That's true democracy.
Is he still around though?
Tim, that's true.
Because I
leaving
because
voicemails.
If he has,
has he left any voicemails recently? Can we give us an update?
Left some. There's a Freedom Tunes video that reported a bunch of voicemails he left on MSNBC's answering machines.
Yeah, that was good. The idea being that Fauci is just out of the media now for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
That's funny.
Wonder if he's
though.
Gonna come back.
I'll give the media that much. They recognized Fauci's out and he's not.
He's like doing the podcast of the kid who lives next door and stuff instead of like regular media.
It's funny because Tim, you sort of mentioned that. You mentioned this, that in a midterm election year, they're saying they're going to fight to reinstate the mandates. It is very bizarre because they've known that that's a losing issue for a little while now, and everything's going so poorly. It's almost like they're just flailing around trying to do anything. They're not even thinking strategy. When you're that low in the polls, when you're just sinking, you're drowning, you're flailing your limbs everywhere, you're not actually making calculated motions.
They're like, we've got 33% left. How do we destroy the last?
Speaking of which, I can't believe I forgot. I uploaded a cartoon about this today. You guys check it out. It's called The Democrats' Brilliant Midterm Strategy.
Or the lockdowns are coming back. Philadelphia brought the mask mandates back.
Yep.
And we'll see. I said end of last year, the lockdowns are going to come back. Luke said that wouldn't happen.
I said they would.
Once it started getting lifted, I was like, I guess Luke was right. I was wrong. But now I'm kind of like, I don't know.
I had reported this and people, you know, got all mad at me because they were discussing this in the White House, returning returning the lockdowns. That they kind of the impetus for that. And then Biden was even going to do a whole speech about it. That basically got flipped into the nationwide vaccine mandate speech. Mm-hmm. But it was essentially the same type of rhetoric. They just switched it from lockdowns into vaccines. But this whole idea of, you know, we're in this together. They keep talking about it. Ron Klain, the White House the White House chief of staff, keeps referring to this as like his FDR moment. Everything's his FDR moment, right? From this to Ukraine to whatever else. He's the new FDR. He's the new FDR, except he can't get anything passed.
Let's talk about Jack Dorsey and CNN. This is from The Hill. Jack Dorsey says he saw CNN try to create conflict in Ferguson.
Tim, you were in Ferguson.
Yeah, and I would say I believe Jack Dorsey is right. Now, can I say I witnessed whatever it is he saw? No.
Okay.
What I can say is CNN was there on the ground, and I would describe it as problematic.
And it was Jake Tapper, right?
Oh, everyone was there.
Oh, wow.
There was that. Who's that portly woman in the pink dress?
Yamich. Oh, no, she's not with CNN. My bad.
She's, I can't remember her name. But she's, like, standing on the street, and then the gunshots start ringing out, and she goes, ugh. Oh, and it's like, what are you doing? Move! People are shooting guns. But no, Don Lemon reported there was no tear gas while I was getting tear gassed. So I'm just like, if Jack Dorsey were to tell me that, I'd be like, yeah. Because when the big news crews came down to West Florissant, I heard one journalist say, he was talking to someone, and then the part of the conversation I heard was, well, I'm just here for networking. It's a great opportunity, or something like that.
Wow.
Cause I think Anderson Cooper was there at some point. I'm not sure. But, if Jack Dorsey says he saw that, I'd be like, that's about in line with the BS I saw them doing. Like crappy reporting, no security, just flailing all over the place, getting things wrong. And I would not be surprised if they were trying to egg things on. Because I've also seen in other instances of protests, news crews ask protesters to pose for them.
And that's essentially what he's saying. But then do they have the actual phrasing up there? Because I think what he was saying about like they asked them to pose. I watched them try to create conflict in filming it, causing the protesters to chant FCNN. So it seems like and this is the way I'm reading it because it's worded kind of weirdly. But it sounds like he's saying they were trying to pose the protesters, and instead the protesters turned on CNN.
And this was all in reference to Brian Stelter said, Tucker Carlson is always selling the same thing, in reference to an analytical piece in the Washington Post that said Fox News was selling doubt. Dorsey responded, and you are all selling hope. And then people were like, he's selling the truth. Jack went off.
Tim, you've spent, and I've been meaning to pick your brain about this, you've spent obviously several hours with Mr. Dorsey on a famous interview/debate.
You saw that viral video?
I sent you that this morning where Tim asks Vijaya of Safety and Trust Team on Twitter, would Twitter allow someone to spread what's considered misinformation about vaccines.
No. I said, would you, so I could be wrong, but I think it was, would you allow someone to share information about vaccines that could be wrong and maybe get someone hurt?
Right.
And they said, that's not a violation of our
rules.
She
said, that's not a violation of our rules. Did not age well.
2019.
Yeah, it was years ago.
But point being that, you spent all that time with her and Jack Dorsey. So what is your take on this? You know, people are calling it the Dorsey redemption arc, but
well, I've been calling it that.
What do you think? What do you think?
A couple things. Maybe, you know, Jack said a whole bunch of really great things when I went there and met with him the first
time. He did.
He was telling me before the show, he was like, I want decentralized, immutable social media on the blockchain. And I said, whoa, that's beyond what I'm even talking about, dude. I'm just saying don't ban people for saying naughty words. You're saying like everything you ever post will be forever. And I'm like,
you started shaming him. You're like, that you, there needs to be more regulation on Twitter, Jack.
Yeah. I was like, wow, I'm on the other side of that one. I was like,
get out of here, Murray Rothbard.
Yeah. I think people should be allowed to remove it. It shouldn't be permanent. But, afterwards we talked about path to redemption. Never happened. And after a little while, I was like, all of these things that Jack keeps talking about, he never does. That he could do, he won't do. So I don't trust him. I don't believe him. He's the CEO. What's going on? If he really believed in it, he'd come out and be like, guys, here's why it can't be done. Here's what I'm struggling with. But he keeps things a secret. It could be that as CEO, he was tied up and couldn't make these moves. I wonder, I mean, he's a billionaire. At what point does he just be like, I don't need to be a billionaire, dude. I can be a 100 millionaire or a 10 millionaire, and I'm going to tell people the truth.
I think he's probably on an NDA or non-compete clause of some sort.
What's the worst case scenario?
They sue him to oblivion.
What does oblivion mean?
I don't know. Take all his net wealth away.
They can't take all of it away. He'll be rich forever.
That's his
point. Why would he? I don't think he's ready to make that sacrifice. But I know what you mean, but I don't think he's going to go
there. That's fine. That's fine. Jack, it is my opinion that Jack, he tweeted out so much to be said that can't be said or something to that effect. Okay. Then either he prefers to be really rich as opposed to help fix the problems, or he doesn't think telling the truth would actually do anything of value, so he won't say it anyway.
So that idea that he's talked about before, also in 2019, because I was kind of tweet mining his timeline for stuff that he said in the past about this. And his idea for decentralizing Twitter was more than just Twitter itself. It was actually the idea of turning Twitter into an internet protocol. And so the idea being is that, and if you remember the original origin story, and I think a lot of these like tech origin stories are kind of like come from a marketing department as opposed to what's actually happened. But the idea was that it was supposed to be just sort of this open group text or an open chat room. And that was the reason for the character limit, so that it was a chat room that you could share with anybody who had access and they followed you and they could get in, right? And so the idea being that it was based off of SMS, it was based off of text message technology. So that's obviously an open protocol. So if you have an Android and I have an iPhone, I can text you, you can text me, we're across platforms. The idea then for this, for a decentralized protocol based on Twitter then, open source. So let's say you have, you know, let's say you use Getter, let's say you use Truth, let's say whatever, like whatever social media you're using Truth. That's on this, there are people who are on it, that, and Twitter, that you would be able to interact with people across the platforms, that I could see those posts if I followed that person, even if they weren't expressly on my platform.
Yeah, that's what we're building with our charity, well, the charity that we're getting revved up at the moment. That's completely the future of the internet. I think Jack's wanted
it,
but he's been
protocol and you can't, yeah, you can't.
Yeah, it's a piece of software that no one controls. It's just a decentralized software unit.
It's just like inverted email. Imagine you'd go to the fire hose, the feed, whatever.
Right.
Anyone can host it. Your account is your own website. So people wouldn't follow, you know, at TimCast. They would follow, you know, at TimCast.com or whatever. And then all of my tweets and videos are on my own website. But if you're following on the decentralized app, you can see those things. I think that's the future, because then no one can ban you. You're just there on the internet and people can subscribe, kind of like RSS.
Mm-hmm.
All we got to do is build it.
No, it's exactly like RSS.
Yeah, right. RSS, yeah. 3.0. That was the beginning of the idea. It's becoming different with what we're working on with everybody. And I'm not ready to announce exactly what it is yet, but it's very, very close to an alpha.
So he teed up something, Dorsey, in a recent tweet, that they do have a project. It's called like Blue Sky, I think.
It's been out for a while. I've DM'd
in this.
This is the thing. I've DM'd with him so often, you know, over the years, like not all the time, but enough. Talking about stuff like this, that I was like, this dude's just lying. because he's going to say these things publicly and he's like, we're working on Blue Sky, and then nothing happens. It's remarkable because.
Which sound great. They all sound great.
Dude, if I had 1/10 of Jack Dorsey's wealth, it'd be done. You'd have an alpha in a few months.
Well, you need developers. Everybody's looking
for billions of dollars.
Yeah, but money isn't a developer. You need to find the people that do it.
Dude, come on.
Find people that like each other, that want to work together.
That's true. But if you had $20 million to spend on the project, it would be an alpha within, come on, 6 months.
I don't know, man. You could throw a lot of money at a group of people and get nothing.
So dude, it's been 3 years.
It's been years. But what they need is organization. I know people with lots of money. They need people to organize and do it.
Right. If you are worth $20 million, you can do it.
Ian, are you extending your services to Jack Dorsey?
I'm doing it for free, baby. Jack, join us, Jack.
It's like, you know, we're trying to set up a nonprofit that has no money to get this going, and it's taking forever to get the filings, but it's been like 6 months, and there's people already working on it. So I don't know what they're doing with Blue Sky, but 3 years on, I'm like, Jack, I really don't believe you're working on this.
I wonder what he's doing.
Yeah, it's whispering sweet nothings into your ears. You want to know what he's doing? Here's what people are saying. Elon Musk might take over Twitter. All of a sudden, Jack Dorsey comes out as this rogue figure who's like, I've had enough. It's time to be honest and tell the truth. And now people on the right are going to be like, yeah, you go, Jack. And then Jack's like, we don't need Elon. I'm here. And then once Elon gets pushed out, Jack's going to be like, okay, so let's start censoring everybody.
Here's
again.
The thing.
And
if we need to censor everyone on Twitter all the time.
You're
not being censored.
You got to do that with Jack.
I wasn't looking at you when you started that, and I thought that was Jack Dorsey.
Yeah. He was actually sitting in the other chair the whole time, and we just didn't know.
How did I miss the nose ring?
Here's the thing.
But I've asked Jack to come on a couple times. He always has like yes at some point.
Hell yeah.
He's busy. I'd love to actually have him talk about these things. The issue is
now's the time.
The first time he went on Joe Rogan. Joe had a huge backlash. He got all these thumbs down because Jack was just saying garbage nonsense. And then they didn't actually get to the core of the issues. Then when I go on with Jack, Vijaya, and Joe, they did not expect to get these questions that I had for them because they probably assumed it was going to be like some right-wing dude just being like, why'd you ban Milo? And instead we had like philosophical questions about, you know, the ethics of the rules and the world views and things like this. All of the things they said, they're just spinning. They're spinning a tail.
Yeah, I think he's because he's on the board. He has like he can't disparage the company, so he can't really say
a fiduciary duty.
Yeah,
yeah,
right.
Well, we were talking about this earlier in the show, but
he likes being a billionaire.
It goes into what Tim you were saying a second ago, which is that as soon as somebody on the left who has been our enemy for virtually their entire time in public life says something remotely sensible, we go yes. This person is speaking truth. We love them. And look, when someone says something that's true, we should absolutely celebrate the fact that they've said something true. But you can't just start looking up to these people as heroes. They've really got to earn it by showing results.
He hasn't.
He
said, I think at one point, that he realizes now that he was part of the problem of creating big tech. He was like, you know, he really wanted a free speech network and he did it, but he didn't, you know, he made some pitfalls. Like with Chris Pavlovsky, you're out there, like what pitfalls to avoid? He went public. That's a pitfall. Be careful. He made his code private. Be careful. That's a pitfall because then people can control it when you're no longer there and you don't have access to it anymore. So he's made those mistakes, and I think the great thing about Jack is he's like been through the gauntlet, and that'd be why he's a great interview.
Well, this is the theory that he's, you know, this is like Dr. Frankenstein and Frankenstein's monster, right? You know, I want to create life, I want to help people, but instead I create this thing that ends up causing more harm than good.
Yeah, no, I am not saying anything about Dorsey, what he's done, whether he is, you know, I just want to make assumptions in good faith and say he does mean what he's saying unless it's proven otherwise. But conservatives can't jump on the he's great horse, right, without seeing some actual results.
I'll throw this out there. You know, I love Twitter, right? I'm coming up on, it'll be 10 years that I've been on Twitter next month. And it is clearly the simplest, most efficient mass communication system that's ever been invented in the history of mankind, right? And Jack Dorsey was part of that. So, like, everything else, I'll always start with that.
You just made me realize I've been on Twitter for, I think, 13 years.
Yeah.
13
like,
years!
Like, I just wanted to go back to the way it was without all this extra stuff. That's literally it.
When it was the free speech wing.
Well, it seemed nice, but it was still proprietary. They were still spying on you. It always seems nice in the beginning, and then they started...
Yeah, but Alex Jones was there, and he was funny.
Well, Jones never actually posted himself. That was always staff.
But I just mean like his videos.
His videos were there. But so and you could and if you didn't like it, you could unfollow it.
Yeah, you block him
or block
now
it.
It's just, mute, it's become so function. Boring.
Yeah. It's so sterile.
You guys want to know the truth? You want to know what all that Twitter really is to me? Is I follow news organizations, journalists, and personalities. And so I'll see like Reuters tweet something. And then when I retweet a news story, this is usually in the past month or so, it's just like reminding myself of the story.
Right.
So I can go back and look for it later. I don't care to interact for the most part. I will sometimes, or I'll just post garbled nonsense because it's hilarious how triggered and riled up everybody get. Like, I tweeted, schools should have religious studies because, you know, great schools because kids have questions and yes, teachers should give answers and the teacher should tell the students to keep it a secret from their parents. Like, I just like posting things like that.
So the importance though of Twitter is because it serves as a narrative bottleneck. Particularly for the West. You can see this most predominantly right now with the war in Ukraine, that the opinion makers and the opinion making, it all starts on Twitter. So then that filters down to whether it be CNN Plus, whether it be Netflix. There's been examples of TV shows that were saved just because they had great, you know, Twitter followings. And from a geopolitical, geostrategic standpoint, we've seen that so much of this comes off of Twitter. Meanwhile, you know, to use Ukraine as an example, because so much stuff gets censored, if you're on Telegram, it's like you're watching a completely different narrative because it's unfiltered on there. Now, obviously, sure, there's going to be bad actors on both sides, but Telegram is uncensored and it's very heavily focused on that, whereas Twitter is heavily censored, or Twitter is heavily censored. And you're getting a completely different narrative there.
Let's jump back to Netflix. We have this story from CNBC. Netflix shares crater 25% after company reports it lost subscribers for the first time in more than 10 years. Get woke, go broke. That's it. Netflix, I mean, they've done some things that are good, but I think the narrative, the machine, it's fumbling, it's bumbling, it's falling apart. Regular people are tuning into shows like this. The media landscape is heavily diversifying. People are sick and tired of the machine. They want something real and authentic.
Isn't it interesting how poorly tech companies seem to be aging over the past 10 or 20 years?
Yeah.
I mean, everyone says, I loved Netflix when it first started. Now it's absolutely awful. Same with Facebook, same with Twitter, basically every social media company.
It's because the CIA, is my guess, is that intelligence agencies are webbed in with these things and making them do stuff and give information away and spying. And when the algorithms aren't free software, like copyleft licenses like AGPL3, you have no way of verifying that. These people, they may look like they're being run by the people that own the company, but they're being run by BlackRock and Vanguard and State Street.
Well, and you look at, you know, you look at something like Netflix, and it's funny you mention that because I always point out that, so, you know, what's the World Economic Forum slogan, that whole you'll own nothing and be happy? Well, when's the last time you actually bought a movie? Like a physical, actual movie that you own. And now I know some people out there that are total cinephiles and will go get, they'll get the 4K, you know, or the Blu-ray, and they want it. They want to have that in their system. But I think for the vast majority of people, we all switched to renting movies and then streaming movies that we do not own, that we do not control. So there's this big, controversy about the new Harry Potter prequel because there's, a gay scene or a gay line in it that got edited out of the Chinese version. It's like 6 seconds or something, right? But my point is, though, is when it comes to Netflix or Amazon Prime or any of these things, if there's something that's in an old scene of a movie or a scene in an old movie that they want excised out, if they want changed, if they want removed, they can just go in and do that. And if you don't own a physical copy of the original film, you're never going to know. And here's the even better part. If you never had a copy of the film, you wouldn't even know.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And that happens with some films.
Chinese Fight Club, did it.
Oh, I was unaware.
They changed the ending.
Well, there are other films, too, where it's not even necessarily done for political reasons. So, for example, in The Last of the Mohicans, you can't really find copies of that film that aren't the director's cut. So the theatrical release is only available on VHS, which is really annoying.
Well, this is Star Wars is like that.
Yes, that's also true. And so even when it's not done for political reasons, sometimes you just want to watch the actual original version of the film. But you're absolutely correct that when it comes to looking back on media from the past and saying that was deeply offensive and insensitive, we have to change it, they're not going to be above doing
that. So we were watching the original DuckTales with my kids, and just going through, cranking through the old DuckTales TV show from the 90s, you know, 80s, 90s, great thing. And I wasn't doing it on Disney Plus. And no, I'm not going to say which site I used. But I realized, cause we're just going through episode by episode, there's a whole episode about a Civil War reenactment. And in this episode, Launchpad plays on the side of the rebels and they're in gray and there are Confederate flags all over this episode.
Oh wow. So the 90s. The show's off the air right now.
Oh, okay.
Our internet is working just fine.
Oh.
But, no one can see anything. I can still use the internet. I can still chat. I know exactly why this is happening too.
Hmm.
You said the forbidden name.
You think?
YouTube took us down.
I just got a message from our tech guys that we may be having internet issues.
Internet's working just fine. I can see the bit rate is up. I can load websites. I can use my phone. But, you know.
I think we're still live.
We'll just not repeat it.
I'm seeing live.
No, there's no show.
You're still not live?
No, not live.
Interesting.
Show's frozen.
Show
all right,
is
well,
frozen.
Let's keep it rolling for the people on Timcast.com.
For the podcast.
And Rumble.
Sure. Yeah.
See, this is why you guys
got
to be
members.
So for
those that are listening on the other podcast.
Mea culpa.
YouTube, we're down.
We got to go to Rumble anyway. Fuck YouTube. Fuck the spy network's bullshit.
So you can say
network.
The name of Libs of TikTok.
You still can't swear.
Perfectly well, fine. I can do whatever I want. I mean, I'm still family-friendly show,
we
but
still
we're
put this
obviously
up on
not
places.
On YouTube.
Yeah.
So.
But now we have to flag it as explicit
well,
when it
okay,
goes up.
All right, I won't.
Thanks, Ian.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Ian Crossland.
Yeah, that's crazy. So I have it pulled up on my computer, and it is just buffering on Ian.
Yeah, but wicked, our stream's working.
I still see the chat, too.
Yeah, chat's working, internet's working, everything's
weird.
Working, but the show's
so
not up.
So I'm getting a message that we may have to switch over to a different network.
I don't know if that matters.
Mm. Hmm.
But we will try. So the issue is that our internet is working, the stream is going up, but YouTube is not putting the show out.
Guys, we're just gonna have to talk in chat then.
This was it. It was the breaking point. I was like Vanguard, State Street, BlackRock. They were like they just
yeah,
okay. too.
We have no other networks available.
Are they
doing it?
Yeah, they're working on it right now. Of course.
Wait, I've got it.
Yeah,
it's gonna freeze on me.
Oh wait, yeah, never mind.
Yeah, there's a delay.
Yep, freezes on Ian making the OK sign.
That's what it
was.
Moment I touch my finger to my thumb.
They're like, look at this.
You know, honestly, I thought it was inevitable. Oh, we're back on.
Oh, the stream is back.
What's up, everybody?
Did they switch the network?
No, that's live because that's me holding the phone right now.
I believe
now.
We're back. Give us a one in chat if you can hear us. And
wait,
we
this
are
is
back.
This is weird because I'm watching.
Oh, we are back.
I'm
we're
actually
back.
Watching my wait. Infinity.
Infinity loop. Conspiracy theorists. Hey, everybody. Sorry about that blip.
But how many frames did it drop?
I'm not sure.
It looks like we were down for a few minutes, but your chat was still rolling. So
was
I was watching you guys.
When I was talking about DuckTales in the old episode about
they didn't
the
want to know
a
that.
Certain red and blue flag with an X that was carried by a gray uniformed army.
Don't say naughty words.
I know. Right?
let me just say for everybody who's listening, smash the like button.
Yes.
Subscribe to Timcast.com. The full version and the weird minute or so, I think it was like 2 minutes that dropped off, will be in the podcast version. But our internet didn't go out.
Explicit.
Our internet didn't go out. I don't know if you guys saw me post in the chat. Everything was working, but on YouTube's
so
end,
weird.
Something was not going through.
Weird.
Now, this has happened in the past where we've been talking about something and related to China, and we've had weird YouTube drop us off.
We are, the age of cyber war is upon us. You never know who's got effective, you know, fingers in the pot.
If you can hear me, smash the like button, everyone. It's the only way we'll know.
Exactly.
We need to know.
I don't
is anybody out there?
Is the like button even like
just to,
anything?
Just to finish the story for my own autistic purposes, that episode of DuckTales on Disney Plus was removed.
Mm. Okay. Which one was it again? Remind me, because I'm
about the Confederacy.
Red Army. Oh. Red Flag, Gray Army.
We were in Tennessee, and it was funny. We were at a gas station. And there was like the gas station sell the Confederate flags and they call it the rebel flag.
Right.
And there's like, it's just like funny seeing like a little girl holding it up, smiling like on the bag, just because of the way the left frames it and the way they freak out. But like when you go to Tennessee or these other states, it's like totally normal and not even that big of a deal to anybody there.
Yeah. We saw flying on a hill on the way back from Tennessee. I was like, what is happening? That's wild.
I want to take a moment to really appreciate the technology that we have right now, this amazing streaming technology, cameras, microphones, the ability to communicate across the world in the blink of an eye with someone from their home. Because like you can see, just because we have it now doesn't mean we're always going to or that we always may. Take advantage of it while you have it.
Yeah, I mean, don't take it for granted. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Agreed.
We can unify a lot of people. I was thinking about Hitler and how he was obsessed with unification. So we got to unify correctly. And I think why the founding fathers had it right, because it was a group of them doing it together. It wasn't one person.
I just noticed that we got a ton of people smashing the like button. So I should do a better. I can't tell if you can hear me. Become a member at timcast.com if you can hear me. It's the only way we'll know.
That's right.
I'm like, people actually did smash the like button. Thank you so much. What were you saying?
Oh, just that we're right on the verge of doing something really great for society if we work together. I think it's easy to grow a cult group of people, like as a YouTuber, for yourself, but you got to remember the dictatorship type thing doesn't work. If we're going to use this technology for good, we got to do it together.
Speaking of cult YouTubers, did we play the
which one?
Mr. No Advertisers.
Oh my god.
This is nuts.
So good.
Sad. Yeah. Wow.
Just awful.
We'll base our freedom around a constitution, not around people.
Yes, of course.
The United States is not a democracy. It
so,
is a constitutional
ladies
republic.
And gentlemen, it is with the utmost remorse and respect that we mention Ethan Klein of the H3 podcast announced. Is this a clip from today?
I believe so.
In a clip that was posted today, he has no sponsors. Whoa. Because he is an existential threat to gay people.
In his own words, I believe.
In his own words. I would like to play for you this clip from the H3 TV video. Here we go.
I'll just say this.
Let me fix the audio.
I'm very thankful to our members. It makes this show kind of bulletproof.
No.
Sorry, Gary Stans.
Here we go.
Today we have no sponsors because I am an existential threat to gay rights and all progress. So, of course, our wonderful fans have taken it upon themselves to write all of our sponsors and to have them not sponsor or not to support us. So we are, I'm very, you know, I'll just say this. I'm very thankful to our members. It makes this show kind of bulletproof to stuff like this, even though it's painful and emotionally, it's just painful that, you know, people would do that.
Okay, I want to say a few things. First, Ethan is correct about members, and that's why I wish we set up the website years ago, but you learn when you learn. And had I known what I know now, I would have been like, that should have been the first thing we did. Because once they started, the censorship was a big problem for a while. We had videos taken down. That's why we dedicated to this. I will say that, Ethan mentions in the clip, you expect more from the sponsors. And, he's right. He's right about that too. You do. But, I will also add, I genuinely do feel bad for Ethan. I think he doesn't understand what he's involved in. I think he doesn't know what the world's become. I think he's genuinely been lost this whole time. Mm. So let's go back in time to January when Ethan Klein deleted episodes he had with Jordan Peterson. He clearly did this because he was panicking about getting canceled. He doesn't want his business to fall apart. So he's just like, okay, fine, dude, I'll do whatever I have to. Ethan, you should have just stood by your principles, which is edgy comedy, free speech, and having conversations with people. We have never had one of our show sponsors cancel on us, pull out on us. In fact, the first sponsor that I had ever had on YouTube, Virtual Shield, sponsors us to this day. Mm. No issues, despite all the controversies, the lies, the smears, the manipulation. And I will stand by what we believe in and what we say, and I'm not going to play these stupid games. Ethan started playing the games, getting scared, panicking. He chose to get into business with these companies, and now he is sitting there saying, it sucks, I have no sponsor. Well, look, man, you got to stand up for yourself. You can't let these people push you around. You should not have taken down the Jordan Peterson episode because you look duplicitous, you look like you're lying, and you look desperate. And so I hope it works out. But hey, man, I can only say, if you want to get in bed with people who will push you off that metaphorical cliff at any moment, well, then I can only say, like, you should have prepared for this. You should have expected it. You knew it was going to happen. Imagine if Ethan Klein, instead of deleting the Jordan Peterson episode, came out and said, They're telling me if I don't delete this episode, they're going to pull my sponsors. Pull them. I will not take down the conversation I had with Dr. Peterson. Imagine how much he'd be supported.
Oh, you get 100,000 more followers that they subscribe to his network.
All new I members. Can say is I hate to say I told you so, Ian. If you had just embodied the Ethan. Archetypal hero, oh my goodness, I've been sitting across from this fella for too long. Apologize for that error. I hate to say I told you so, Ethan.
If he, here's what he did. He said to the people who try to threaten you by having your sponsors taken that he will comply.
Yep.
He said, yes, if you are somebody who is sponsoring my work, I will dilute my message and walk back things I've said in the past once you've told me not to. You're inviting control at that point. And also, I want to point out that when you cultivate a fan base full of people who would cancel someone, guess what happens to you eventually? You get canceled. Mm. It's not that complicated.
If I feel like this is a guy who got started doing edgy comedy on Reddit and YouTube.
Yes.
And things like that. And then as times went on, he thought, I just better say what they're saying. The problem is, once again, this is not mainstream America. He is bending the knee to weirdos. Jordan Peterson is popular among regular people. The people who don't like him are the fringe weirdos. Regular people do like him. So when you say, I'm going to take it down because he's a bad guy, you got tricked. Ethan Klein got tricked. And now, what's he going to do? You know, I'm seeing everyone on the right mock him and they're laughing about it. Jordan Peterson told him that eventually he'd be held to a standard by the very mob he currently wishes to please. Then you will make a mistake and they will devour you with glee. Please take this warning seriously. I liked you.
Huh.
Ethan should not have sided with those seeking to destroy. He should have sided with those seeking to protect and to develop. Because if he came out and said, I liked talking to Dr. Peterson on more than one occasion. I may not agree with everything he has to say, but we have to defend our right to say these things. Then they'd be like, we're going to harass your sponsors. And he'd be like, okay. And then people on the right would be like, we got sponsors for you, buddy. Don't worry. We appreciate you standing by your principles and doing your thing. But too much Ethan has been drifting into just saying whatever the left wants. And look at what happens. You know, he did that thing with Hassan. You want to live with people. Like, you want to work with people who will destroy you in 2 seconds? By all means, you go ahead and do it. But I don't know what I can do for you when your life is destroyed by these very people.
We can supply technology that you can use, Ethan, in the future for direct subscription content so you can bypass, like, Patreon and crap like that. Take control of your network. We'll do it. We'll work together, man. I like you.
I am real quick on the issue with our stream. Every message I'm getting in is people saying that the minute it stopped was right when Ian started talking about intel collection via social media.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. I said even it was like the CIA, but there's no way
you definitely
to know.
Said CIA.
Yeah, I said CIA,
and then people
I said
are
intelligence.
Like, CIA, shut them down.
Yeah, and then it immediately stops.
And someone, I think, may have pointed out foreign networks as well, because when I'm talking intelligence agencies, it doesn't have to be an American one.
Wait, you just said it again.
Okay, but, and he should.
Show's
going
to freeze.
But to be fair, Ethan Klein, he gets canceled by the left and loses sponsors. We call out the CIA, and then our stream just freezes in midstream. So,
right.
You got to choose.
I'm
your
working
battle
with the American government. We are the good guys. I'm even down with secret agencies,
you need,
man.
You
the
need,
world is
look,
harsh.
Look, you need what you need to do is obviously because he's now a free agent, apparently, because Malcolm Nance is no longer working for MSNBC. You need to sign him up as a special foreign correspondent for Timcast, for Timcast IRL. Would you sign Malcolm Nance?
No.
But why?
Because
racism.
He's a bad person.
Did he actually go to war? Is that what happened?
He was an intelligence officer. But
no,
he's
not an intelligence officer.
He was never a naval intelligence officer?
Never a naval intelligence officer.
Wikipedia says he was.
He was a Navy chief, which is not an officer, and he was a linguist. That is not the same thing.
Wikipedia was wrong.
Oh my gosh.
Shocking.
No.
He's got a picture of himself like he's in Ukraine with like tactical gear and
stuff. You saw the video, right?
Yeah, where he's like looking at his watch and he's like, the missiles! They're coming!
It's south, southwest! Stand by! Stand by! And he's like when my dad.
Everyone else is just sitting there like, dude, what are you
everyone's
doing?
Like walking around the background. My dad, you know, when we were little, he used to, you know, when you hear the lightning and thunder and you can, you know, count how many seconds between the flash, it's like 1,000, 2,000. And then, but Nance is doing that for missiles. They're flying over. That's a cruise anti-ship missile. It's coming from a ship towards us now.
Bravo.
And everyone's like, okay, dude, like, you're fine. Like, it's, yeah, we know. Like, we're aware.
What?
want to talk to you guys about Twisting Universe. You down to go?
Maybe in a little bit.
We should delve into it.
We should talk about
Ethan, having him on the show.
Well, Ethan's welcome on the show, but I don't think he'd do it because they never want to. Actually, there's a lefty guy who's tweeting at he's DMing me right now, like, why aren't I on the show? Here's the issue with the left, as we often bring this up. Prominent left personalities always have an excuse as to why they won't come and do a show. Yeah. It's always Ben Shapiro yelling, debate me, or at least the meme, right? But when it comes to the left, they're like, I'm not going on your show. Or they'll publicly be like, I'll go on a show. I can do it.
Yeah, I saw your whole thing with Hassan the other day.
Yeah, because he said he would come out and come on the show. But then he DM'd me and he was like, hey, bro, like COVID, I'm pretty scared of COVID, so I don't want to do it. And I said, I get it, man.
That was the first time.
That was the first time.
Right.
And then this time he got mad because Hassan tweeted a joke. David Pakman said, do you know anybody who's pro-abortion? Hassan then said, me, I'm trying to do this. David Pakman said, that sounds weird. Someone said, what's wrong with more abortions? I screen grabbed that and posted it with no comment. I thought it was funny. I thought the whole interaction was funny. No comment. And Hassan responds with, it's a joke, man. Do you need me to put /S? And I'm like, I didn't say it wasn't a joke. I literally just reposted what you did. Like,
right.
So then he made a tweet about how, you know, me and Dave Rubin or whatever. And then I was like, we claim to be progressives or true progressives. And, or like, we're people who are rallying people who claim to be true progressives. And I was like, I've never said I was a progressive. I am not a progressive. I am a centrist moderate. And he was like, you're literally doing what I'm making fun of you for. And I'm like, dude, I was like, that's not an argument. You're welcome to come on the show and give a conversation. And then all of a sudden, I'm not coming on your show. I won't do it. And then I was like, oh, here we go. You know, so we got a guy who wants to come on the show. And
he was saying because you're another part of the country and the travel and cut into my Twitch streaming.
He agreed to do it before. And COVID was the reason. And now it's, oh, I'm too busy. And I'm like, dude, I can respect if you're busy. It's hard for me to travel to go to other people's shows. I still bought a trailer. We drove down to Nashville and I went on I went on Candace's show on the Daily Wire. I went on their sports show and I went on Backstage Live. I will make that happen. And so I was like, dude, I'll get the trailer. We'll bring it to LA. It'll be really difficult, but we'll figure that out. Spend a week in LA maybe. I don't really want to.
How was the drive to Nashville, by the way?
Oh, it's fun. Going to the mountains.
It was cool.
That looks like it'd be nice.
We listened to by Blues Traveler a few times. That song is amazing.
Yeah, and Judas by Perfect Circle. Good guitar. Amazing guitar.
Love Perfect
and
Circle.
And one of the best songs I've heard in a while by Nickelback, The Devil Went Down to Georgia. And I am being completely serious. I cannot believe that was actually Nickelback.
He actually put it on before the episode, and it was I'm saying this live.
It's good.
Nickelback's good.
It's a good Nickelback song.
No,
but it's not a Nickelback song. But it's not a Nickelback song. So Nickelback does a good version of another song.
Here's the other issue is we've got somebody on the left. They're like the people who want to come on the show that are on the left have like no followers. They're not particularly prominent individuals. I get messages from people who are like, I'd love to come on the show. And I'm like, dude, I'm not saying you shouldn't come on the show just because you have no followers. Cause that's not the prerequisite for being on the show, but it's the body of work. And typically there's a correlation between someone with, you know, who's not particularly prominent and a limited body of work for which we can actually comment on. And then what happens is you bring on someone who is a limited body of work and a low following count. And when you end up destroying them in a debate, the left then says, the only thing you could do is bring on this guy who's that good because he couldn't get a real debate. And it's just like, I got no problem. We've got a few people come on. We've had people come on that only have a few thousand followers because followers is not the reason. We've had people come on with no social media and things like that. I'm just referring to body of work.
And you let Ian come on.
Yeah. Thanks, all
right,
by the
of
way.
Course. Actually, yes. Ian's got a bunch of followers.
Yeah.
You know, the first time I was ever invited, I really had to have a long debate with myself about whether I wanted to platform Tim. I was like, am I promoting
right.
this?
I know, right?
This
evil, I got a you know, feeling that a lot of people are afraid work. That if they come talk to you, that you'll bring up like information and over, like just destroy them with like, not destroy, but
facts.
Take them to town with information and facts, and then they'll feel like an idiot and look humiliated when in fact they can just come hang out and just like learn.
But about the problem stuff. Is, like, do you guys remember when Hunter Avalon was on this show?
Yeah.
Yeah, he tried challenging me on the Ukraine story with Biden. And I was like, wow, you're really going
to. Was this when he was trying? So he, cause he like got big as like a conservative and then he tried to like veer really hard to the left.
And so this was after he was already now like a liberal.
Right.
But he was like, I mentioned the Joe Biden, you know, well, yeah. SOB, I got fired. He's like, that didn't happen. And I was like, yeah, it did. He's like, no, it didn't. And I'm like, here's the video. And then I'm like, bro, don't come here. Having done no research, but acting like you know these stories. I've dug in and done so much journalism on this stuff. The problem is with people like him and is that he sees memes and thinks Tim Pool has no idea what he's talking about and just repeats right-wing talking points, when literally all day this morning I was digging into the Washington Post story, looking at public records and doing legit hours of like real research in journalism. I make phone calls. I do the work. It is rough. Mayo Gate, I love this story. Actually called the restaurant. I call for comment. We do this all the time. I reached out to Taylor Renz for comment. I reached out to the Washington Post for comment. Our newsroom did this stuff. We do the research. These people see these memes and these meme clips and they're like, the right silly talking points. Dude shows up here and says, Joe Biden never said that. I was like, are you kidding, bro? Did you even Google it? Here's the video. And I played it. And he's like, oh, that really happened. And then I'm like, let's talk about Mykola Zlochevsky. Let's talk about the formation of Burisma. Let's talk about the former CIA guy who's working on there. Let's talk about Gazprom. Dude, you do not want to get involved with me. I was in Ukraine. I went there. I watched those protests happen. I'm not going to pretend to be the expert of all experts on this stuff. But man, for these people living on the internet, doing no research, then they finally come here and it is like getting slammed by a tidal wave where it's like, oh, wow, boy, do they look bad. And the problem is for many of these people is they want to maintain this facade of I'm on the left. Well, what happens when they come and sit down with Steve Bannon and Steve Bannon goes, tax the rich? And they go, I agree, Steve Bannon.
Yeah, we're all.
And then all everyone on the left is like they're agreeing with Steve Bannon. There you go. That's one of the big problems. I know the left does not like, you know, I think is good. Destiny. Was it Stephen Bonnell III? Cause that guy has no problem telling it exactly how he thinks.
He and I got into it once though.
And that's fine.
But it was because he accused me of not, of lying about being in the military and lying about being in the IC. And I did not take that well.
When he came on the show, he has no problem.
And it didn't go well for him.
He knows the stories. He knows what he thinks about them. We just disagree. And I'm like, I can respect that. But there are many people where they think they're going to come on this show and they're going to be like, you think this about race. And I'm like, no, I agree with you on systemic racism. And they're like, you do? And I'm like, yeah, do you watch this show? And they're like, no, but I saw memes once. So this is one of the reasons I think they really do not want to come on the show. Hassan will come on the show. You know what the last thing I said about Hassan before that tweet thread was? That he was right. There was a story that came out. I can't remember exactly what it was. It was months ago. And I was like, he was Julian Assange, I think. I defended him. Because people were ragging on him about Julian Assange. And I was like, Hassan did not, like, was making a joke about Assange. He did not literally say this. And I'm like, it's silly. We don't need to go after him, blah, 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 just because. And then the dude gets mad at me because he doesn't actually watch the show. If Hassan came on the show, he'd be like, what about this? And I'd be like, I agree. And Ian would be like, I agree. And Seamus would be like, yeah, actually, I agree with the details of that. I may disagree on policy. And then what's he going to say? What's he going to argue about? All of a sudden, the narrative is going to be Hassan goes on Timcast and agrees with everything they're saying. He must be far right.
Yeah, just talk about your past, man. Let's learn about where got you to video streaming and into it. You used to work for the Young Turks. Like, what's your relationship with Cenk when you guys were young? You know, that kind of stuff. Let's just show humans that we can interoperate and still have differing views.
I tweeted at him. He was like, why can't I go on Zoom? And I was like, we don't do Zoom. Internet makes us hate each other. It's better to sit down, shake hands, and talk about it. And that's why we do it the way we do. Andy No hit me up and he's like, can I do your show remote? And I said, sorry, dude, can't do it. Then he came here. Lauren Southern, can I come on your show remote? I said, no, we don't do remote. Sorry,
you said,
can't do
you
it.
Can't even do it in person, Lauren. Like, we don't want to see you around here.
Yeah, and well, even for Andy No and Lauren Southern.
Oh, yeah. Like, what about Snowden?
I don't want to do it. I really do not want to do it. I remember watching Joe Rogan's episodes where he did Zoom, and I was like, not fun.
Yeah, his Snowden episode is 30 million views just because it's Snowden.
I don't do this for 30 million views. Yeah. Like, I want to sit down with people and talk. And even when we had...
So would you go to Russia to interview Snowden?
The problem
Assuming,
is...
Assuming, you know, travel was fine and all.
Oh, 2 seconds.
Yeah.
The real issue is that I can't run a business while flying to Russia. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're trying to get to that point.
Believe me, I know exactly what you mean.
Why are you scared of debating Snowden?
So you won't debate Snowden then? You're terrified?
I would love to debate Snowden and say that you published documents without going through them and redacting critical information, and that was a serious intelligence risk. I don't view Edward Snowden as a whistleblower. I view him as a leaker because he did not actually review the documents that he was giving away. And he's admitted to that. I can respect that he admitted to it. Like, I think the distinction is important. He did expose a bunch of really important things. That's fantastic. But I think terminology is important in understanding what someone did. Someone who sees malfeasance and says, hey, you guys got to know about this, whistleblower. Someone who says, I see bad stuff. I'm going to take all of it and just give it to journalists. I'm like, leaker, different thing. You know, he did blow the whistle technically.
What about Manning then?
Manning was a whistleblower, collateral murder.
That was incredible, by the way.
But didn't Manning still grab a bunch of documents?
There were a bunch of documents, leaker. Yes.
If it depends. I don't know exactly. I'd have to research the Manning stuff. The issue with Snowden was that Snowden has admitted to being like, I didn't read this. And it's like, okay, well, then you're just leaking stuff that you don't actually know what you're putting out there. And I think it was actually, it might have been John Oliver, who was like, in the documents you released, there was unredacted critical information that put people at risk. And he was like, I didn't check. Or it was, no, he was like, it was published by the journalists. They failed to redact. And he was like, I didn't know. And he's like, shouldn't you have to, like, isn't that your responsibility? And Snow was like, yeah, that is, I guess. So I can respect that, you know. But we got a few minutes. You wanted to mention that the universe is twisting out of control?
Yeah, well, it's definitely twisting under control, apparently. There's this theory that the universe is expanding, and a big part of that is because when they look far, far out into the universe beyond the galaxy, they see what's called a red shift. It looks like the stuff that's further away, the wavelengths of light are getting longer. So I started to think about wavelength, and I brought this little prop. And I'm sorry, if you're not watching the video, you're going to have to get a hold of one of the videos so you can watch this part and get an idea. But maybe you can imagine along with me. Look at this wavelength. Now imagine it's on a flat plane. It's going to look like a very short wavelength, like da-na-na-na-na. It's very short. If this wavelength turns sideways, the wavelength itself becomes longer. It's the same wave. You're just looking at it from a different angle. So it will begin to appear red as it's turning. And then I started thinking of the torus and how maybe we're on like a donut, like on the torus twisting around itself, seeing the outside of the universe from a different angle, so we see the light reflecting. And then I started thinking about the singularity at the center of every black hole and every toroidal black hole, perhaps, and the Big Bang. And I think what's happening is as we're twisting around, once we twist back through the center, we have what we consider the Big Crunch. And then when we come out the other side of the center, it expands open into what we might think is the Big Bang. So I tweeted about it. You can follow along.
Oh, Ian posted this image of the donut universe. Yeah. So Ian believes the universe is both hollow and flat.
And I'm not saying that the universe is not expanding. It might still be expanding. It's just the main piece of evidence for the expansion is the redshift. And if this also explains the redshift, then you could argue that you may want to remove that evidence as part of the expansion theory.
Ian is effectively arguing for solid state theory, just a little different version of it. Solid state theory was like before the Big Bang. They believed the universe just was, and it was like, you know,
yeah, molding. And then this would be a black hole that we're inside of, that's inside of another universe that's also a black hole, well, which is ever fractally expansion.
I believe Hawking had a theory as well about multiple Big Bangs, and that so it was, which is kind of lines up with what you're saying.
Like it just keeps happening over and over.
That it.
How does that explain the Big continues. Bang?
Well, that once you're twisting around back and through the center, you experience the singularity or the Big Crunch where everything comes together for a moment and then expands back out again.
Oh,
and
that's, I see.
So it folds in on itself.
If you're in the inside and then coming out the other side, it looks like it's exploding, like blasting out.
Right.
So actually, I would say your twisting universe theory is you have a three-dimensional representation of a twisting universe, but perhaps it's actually it's beyond three dimensions.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the universe is...
Yeah, this is a three-dimensional way to look at it.
But I think, Ian... You should read about M theory and string theory.
Yeah, Eric Weinstein particularly has a geometrical unity theory and he talks a lot about that the universe is also a torus. And Nassim Harriman talks about the universe in the Schwarzschild proton paper, how it's equal density, and which made no sense because it was expanding. So with this theory, this could explain why there's equal density.
But
in the universe
I got to say, I've read a little bit about M theory a while ago, and it looks like this is a rudimentary concept.
Interesting.
Yeah, like if you actually read M theory, you'd be like, oh, this is a few steps before where we're actually
at. One thing I keep finding with science is that there's so many ways to explain something. You can explain it two-dimensionally, three-dimensionally, four-dimensionally, five. And they're all right. They're all different ways. Like the electric universe is real. Gravity is real. But they're just different ways of looking at the force.
What's amazing to me is that and Seamus, you probably know about this too. So Isaac Newton, right? And we credit him. And I was on the War Room. We talked about this a little bit on the Easter special that Newton was, you know, he's basically credited for like, obviously being one of the smartest guys that ever lived. You know, arguably, you know, developed calculus, at least independently, you know, master of Cambridge for years and years, but he didn't even consider himself a mathematician. He thought that was just like a side gig. And what he really focused on was theology, the Bible, the secrets of the universe. They call it alchemy and occult thinking, but what he really was interested in was, I mean, this idea of codes in the Bible, codes in the pyramids, digging millions and millions of words that he wrote about this after he left Cambridge that people just totally dismissed.
When you were talking about Jesus dying and then going through hell before he ascended to heaven, it made me think of the Taurus and going through the center of the singularity, experiencing hell to be rebirthed.
Well, yeah, we were talking about that a little bit prior to the...
Maybe we can do that in the after show. We'll talk more about that.
We can get that if you want, but that's the theory, the layers of hell.
Tim, you brought up a cool graphic. So what's this?
String theory.
Tell me about it.
It's string theory.
So is this
I'm not a physicist.
M theory also?
I think M theory is an advanced version of it, but I'm not a physicist. I read one book a long time ago, but the general idea is the universe is like a series of membranes that are folding.
So it could be a bunch of toruses all like, you know, like this thing behind me. Where is it? Over here. It's like a bunch of toruses all layered on top of each other, like maybe 64 of them. And then you get a shape like that. Could be something.
Perhaps.
I mean, that's like in motion. But we just took a snapshot of it.
Or the Earth is both hollow and flat. Donut Earth theory.
Tell me more.
Well, you know, I was reading these people saying that the Earth was hollow, and I was like, interesting. But then I saw these people saying the Earth was flat, and I'm like, why not both? That's a more fun theory, in my opinion. Donut Earth?
What is inside the donut Earth?
Jelly.
Jelly.
Boston cream. No, I'm going to go with jelly.
So it's full of Taylor Lorenz?
There are probably gigantic caverns underground, which may have huge rivers and oceans and like plant, like fungus that grows and glows like iridescent light and animals we've never seen before.
What if it turned out that like the surface world is the North Korea of Earth and that, you know, the deep underground are advanced civilizations of humans? And then we're just living in this dictatorship where they don't let us go to the North Pole to go into the hole, into hollow Earth.
Oh, and they're controlling us through the ELF band, the extremely low frequency, which is another interesting, the ELF band of radiation, the extremely low frequency band. And Michael Malice talks about DMT and seeing elves. And when you see this ELF band of frequency that is apparently interconnecting the human consciousness, maybe they're affecting it from underground. That's
maybe
kind of a joke.
But how about we affect super chats? So if you haven't already, smash that like button, become members at timcast.com if you want to watch the members only show coming up, and become a member in general just to support the work our journalists do, because I got to say 90%+ of what you'll get from timcast.com is just the journalism that we put out, and it is only possible because we have members. So that is the true value of the site, because if we got to the point where we had like 200,000 members, then you would be seeing our articles everywhere. We want to get to the point where breaking news doesn't come from fake news manipulators and liars who dox. It comes from real journalists, and that's what we're working on. So don't forget to smash that like button, subscribe to this channel, share the show with your friends, and let's read some super chats. Gerald Armstrong says, Tim, we need to spread the word and find out what happened to Gonzalo Lira. What happened to Gonzalo Lira?
Well, from what I can tell, he was in Ukraine documenting the war. The Daily Beast did an article about him and took a lot of stuff out of context from what I could see.
He was a PUA guy at first,
what's
right?
What's PUA?
Pickup artist.
Yeah, he was a pickup artist, like a YouTuber.
And then he's not even particularly like political prior to this.
And either he said some wrong thing. I mean, when your country's at war, if you start talking out against your country, I imagine they're going to look at you as an enemy.
No, I don't think he's Ukrainian, though.
No, he's an American in Ukraine, but he was in Ukraine.
I think he's born in Chile, actually. Okay. So Chilean, but has American citizenship, but somehow ends up, I don't know the full details there.
Yeah, American Chilean.
But he was in, I believe it was Kharkiv in Ukraine, posting videos. I saw one of his videos. It was, you know, it was fine. I didn't find anything threatening by his video or anything like that. I mean, he was just posting basically his theories about some stuff that was going on in the media.
From the quotes I saw from Daily Beast, it made him look like a Putin apologist and that he thought Russia was in the right. It was kind of framing it like that. And then all of a sudden he disappeared. Now no one knows where he is.
Well, so he had a tweet up that went hyper viral, and he said, if you want to know the truth about Ukraine, look up these. And I think it was like seven names of various figures and oligarchs throughout Ukraine. And then he said something to the extent of, if you don't hear from me in 12 hours, you know, this will be my last tweet or something. And then then he actually disappeared after that.
Wow. All right, well, let's read more. We got Sorta, who says, less talk, more chickens. Woo. That's right. Chicken City is up and running and one of the most successful super chatted live streams in the world. No joke. Yeah, seriously. I think after we get a few months of Chicken City up and running, you'll see it appear in the top rankings. But based on the current trend of averaging, I think we're averaging around like $1,200 a day. One day we had like 15, one day we had like 9, then we had like 12. So people really do enjoy feeding chickens.
Shout out to Roberto,
chicken parties,
the king of the chickens.
Yeah, he's going to be retiring soon though.
All right.
Because Sarah had a son, so he's a Brahma, and he's going to be really big. He's a big rooster. And so we want, you know, those big rooster genes. We want to make the chickens all bigger. So we're going to be, you know, he's going to take over.
A new Roberto, stud.
Roberto Jr. will be in charge for a while. Roberto was going to go retire at the boys' dormitory. And then, you know, we got some roosters coming in.
Toxic masculinity. It doesn't sound like a democracy at all.
No, no. In fact, when Dorothy was getting loved too much by Roberto, because this happens, they get a favorite. Mm-hmm. It ruins their backs and rips their feathers out. So we had to put her in sex jail. And a lot of people were like, why are you putting the victim in jail? And I was like, because it's just chicken society is different. The rooster is guarding the chickens. He does his thing.
It's protective and, custody.
But if you take him out, then when they come back in, he'll fight with the other rooster.
Right.
Because they're going to try and reset a pecking order. So it's the we have two roosters. We have a bunch of hens, and it works because the younger rooster knows his place. If you take one out and reintroduce him, two adult mature chick roosters are going to be like,
they're
going like
to fight it out.
It's not going to be that bad. People, like, they're not fighting roosters. It's not going to be like a rooster fight like people think happens. They'll chase each other around a bit, and then they'll get into a fight and then stop. But we don't need to do that. So it's easier to just take out the one hen.
We tried getting a bib for her back to protect it, like armor, but he kept flipping the bib off, I guess. I don't know.
She would rip it off. She didn't like it.
Oh,
yeah. Yep, yep. So, but when Roberto retires, Roberto Jr. will come in, and it's not going to have that problem. And then we're going to put an immature male who will view him as the boss. And then once he grows up, he'll see him as the boss, and we don't got to worry about it. So that's, you know, we'll be cycling him out. All right, let's read some more. We got Balian says, Jet, curious if you talked with Kelly Shibaka of AK running to take Murkowski's seat and what your opinion of her is. Also curious if you guys have tried getting her on your show.
Haven't spoken to her directly, though I have seen her all over Bannon's War Room, and she goes on quite frequently. Alaska's an interesting state, right? And, you know, to understand politically, because you'll have people who, like, they love smoking weed, but they also love guns, right? So it's sort of this, like, quasi, it's very, very earthy, right, in that sense, right? A lot of people who love, you know, very naturalist kind of society. So it's different, I think, than anything in the lower 48. And that being said, Murkowski is very strong, going to be pulling out the stops. Though I think Shibaka has a real chance of actually beating her. We're looking at potentially looking at going back up to Alaska this year, do some filming up there, do some shooting, talk about some of the actual resources that we have in Alaska. I mean, that's America's treasure chest in terms of natural resources. You know, we talk about annexing or purchasing Greenland.
Occupy Alaska.
Right. Occupy Alaska, invade Alaska, go in there. Actually, right, and you hear Biden, by the way, he talks about, oh, we're going to start opening up federal leases again. Well, it's not about, or Jen Psaki will come out and say, oh, well, we don't need to do drilling because we already have 9,000 leases out there. Well, the issue isn't the leases. The issue is the EPA and getting the environmental approvals to actually drill on the leases. Cause we went all the way up with Daniel Turner and we went up to Prudhoe Bay and you can see the oil rigs. And I didn't know this and, you know, whatever, you know, not an expert in oil rigs, but I didn't know that oil rigs were mobile. On land. So they have, they have giant treads and you can actually drive it with a joystick like an actual gigantic Gundam.
Whoa.
And yeah, dead serious, right? I'm like, why do you guys not lead with that? Right. And the point, and they're all just sitting around doing nothing.
Wow. All right. Let's read more. We got A Sea Lion in Orange says, By Pillow was an amazing book to read. Such a great book. It left me speechless by Michael Knowles, available in paperback June 2022.
Wow.
Amazing.
Michael Knowles turned selling his book into a meme. And I respect it.
Yeah, of course.
I
respect it.
Fantastic. I do marketing. Like the By Pillow, though. Yeah. So there was a notepad in front of Jack. I was like, I can take notes now. And then he wrote By Pillow on it and put it behind it.
I was like, do you have anything to publicize, Jack? He's like, I don't know.
By Pillow. I just want you to buy the pillow. Yeah. So I don't know why you didn't.
Where can they get that pillow, by the way?
Just buy MyPillow.com promo code.
Clef the Misfit says, Tim, your quote, only some people have souls theory has been keeping me up at night. NPCs who can't think independently or see the machine elves found another symptom. They have no internal monologue. They'll tell you that.
Is it the pineal gland?
Not all of them.
No,
some
like,
of them.
They've done, you know, surveys and people, they've asked people, do you have an internal monologue? Do you like think and talk and like your mind? And there are people who say no.
Yeah, some people don't. I don't think that breaks. Does that break down along? Are there any statistics on how that breaks up based on political views or anything like that?
I don't know. I
just
love
using NPC.
Can we hire
broadly?
Someone? No joke. Can we hire like a polling firm to do that?
Huh. Yes.
Yeah, that would be really, really interesting.
Everyone has souls. Stop despairing.
Yeah, I wondered if someone's in a lot of pain if they can't feel it or something.
I think everyone has souls.
Yeah.
Like if they're
not like, not like everyone has collected souls, like everyone has multiple souls in a jar or something, but everyone has a soul or everyone, a body and soul. Yeah.
But you have to develop your soul. You can also kill your soul, right? You don't want to do that.
I would love to get into that maybe on the after show.
I have to think about that. Is that how, is that, I'm trying to think if that's the theological way of describing it. Well, yeah, you can.
All right. Let's see. Raymond G. Stanley Jr. says, Tim, libs of TikTok is a major player in the political culture war. Laws were written based on the videos she shared. She'll only get bigger now. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, libs of TikTok should just be a public figure. And
well, I think they did come out and Seth Dillon made the announcement that she is going to be getting hired with Babylon Bee.
Oh, really?
They did do a deal. I had heard a little bit about this. He tweeted, basically put out a tweet thread saying we stand by her. She will not be canceled her new job, and alluded to the fact that Babylon Bee has done a deal with libs of TikTok.
Right on. All right. The user known as Tim says, Tim, if doxing is solely a matter of free speech, then it won't be any issue if we counter dox every single journalist who does this nonsense, right? So I think doxing is wrong, but doxing is free speech. You can go outside with a big poster board of someone's name and address and private information and picket it around. It is protected speech. That's why I said I think some censorship makes sense. And I think we can all agree that there are some things like doxing is off limits. The issue is doxing is not a political opinion. It is a form of
intimidation,
threat, or stochastic terrorism.
And as soon as you mix it with implying that someone's bad and then you dox in the same article, that's political. When you're talking about someone's values and making value claims on someone in public, that's a political move.
Yeah, I think doxing, I have no problem with doxing not being on social media. Doxing is not a personal opinion. Doxing is not a political opinion. Doxing is not speech in the sense that it's not political speech. It is just posting the information on
someone's
private.
Well, this is under the minimize harm theory.
You know, and I will say too, I'm not an absolutist in this. I'm willing to hear some counterpoints because allowing someone to determine when they can ban you based on doxing could also restrict you from publishing newsworthy events that aren't doxing, but could be someone's address.
Well, as an example though, doxing can also be revealing someone's name, not necessarily just their address. So if you get these viral videos, not just lives of TikTok type videos, but let's say a video of a criminal act, and you have the ability to actually positively identify the person in one of these attacks. We see like attacks on Asians or a shooting or, whatever it is. If you can identify that person, that's not doxing.
Therein lies, the big challenge. I do disagree with publishing the name in these stories because it doesn't serve the story itself.
No.
It's an attack. I have no problem with if, Taylor Lorenz wrote an opinion piece saying, here's my opinion of this person, and I'm publishing their name specifically because I want you to know it. I'd be like,
we should probably say this, but there actually is a story to be told about libs of TikTok, but the story would be, why did the account take off? What was the content they were dealing with? Why were laws written? What was the impact of it? But that wasn't this story.
Yeah. All right. John Kristen says, Kristen. Love Poso, by far my favorite guest on IRL, despite him talking smack on my hometown, Altoona, and cargo shorts.
Altoona, PA. Shout out to Altoona.
Yeah, that was fun, right?
Yeah, that was
Altoona
awesome.
Was fun.
That was a little ribbing. That was a little ribbing, but not about cargo shorts. Cargo shorts are absolutely unacceptable.
Dalamar says, the question is simple. Why did all of these old papers and media just become the National Enquirer over the last 10 years? Has the internet just ravaged them that much?
Yes.
Waiting for the New York Times and WAPO article finding Hitler's skull. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, we're already at that level where it's like, an activist gets hired and then blogs and they're like, national news, run with it.
It used to be there were three networks that were held very tightly as the gatekeepers, ABC, NBC, CBS. And then when it splurged out into all these millions of people giving the news, now it's about who's the most entertaining, who's going to catch your eye with spectacle.
Yeah, but that's actually more traditional. The centralization of news is only something that really came about with the advent of television. Prior to that, every town had like three or four newspapers, a bunch of radio stations, or even, if you go back even further, pamphlets. And so, yellow journalism, the Spanish American War, 1898 is always talked about as one of these things of who could make the biggest splash, who could say, oh, the Spaniards are against us. They're blowing up the Maine in Havana Harbor. They're doing all this stuff. We got to go against them. So the idea of viewpoint neutral journalism, actually something that only arose really with the advent of television in the 1950s to early 1960s, coincides, of course, with the Vietnam War. But that's not the traditional American view and really experience with media. That's only something that arose because of that one limited, very limited interaction. If you go back to today's, of course, the anniversary of the Battle of Lexington and Concord, the shot heard around the world. And if we remember, it was those localized pamphlets, independent printers, independent publishers, Thomas Paine, you know, printing stuff and handing it out to people in inns and taverns that really formulated the sort of the thought experiment behind the American Revolution that led to the independence of this country.
Yeah. All right. Dan says, Tim, big fan of you and the team. Timcast subscriber and enjoy the extras. Although I don't take advantage of the membership, I will never cancel out of support for what you and the team do. Thank you. What we need to do next is, it's a lot. We're juggling so much. Pop culture crisis, of course, has been, you know, getting bigger, getting more views, getting more subs. So we want to have that show that engages with pop culture getting bigger, because that's how we're going to impact it by participating. But, we need to hire prominent writers who do good op-eds, analysis, and think pieces so that we can start making opinion paywalled articles for timcast.com. So that way we can share these stories and then be like, hey, here's, you know, like a value proposition. We have a lot of users. We have a lot of subscribers. The overwhelming majority are subscribing for the general mission and content of the website. And it's not necessarily just about the members only stuff. It's just like, it's the news team. It's the writing we do. It's the whole mission. We know this because we had subscribers even before we had the paywall. We just had to do that to create a better value proposition. So that's the next thing. I want to hire two opinion writers in cultural politics. So we're looking at a handful of people, and then they'll write articles when they write articles addressing big stories like this. And then those will be like paywalled op-eds just to give the members more stuff. Plus we have the green room, and we're trying to expand and grow and do crazy stuff. Matthew Emmons says Babylon Bee CEO Seth Dillon announces partnership with Libs of TikTok. I think it's a good fit. I really do. All right. Placid Saint says Netflix may have gone down because a new series called He's Expecting just got released, and it looks super cringe and looks like utter gutter trash. I can only imagine what that one's about. We'll see.
It's an affront to God.
Not the only thing on Netflix either.
No.
All right. Let's see. Sean McCormick says there are trending rumors that Dr. Fauci is facing a military tribunal since April 18th. Please look into this. It could be huge and is definitely not happening. And I would bet a lot of money it's not happening. I mean, that's just, come on.
That's like Wiki World News level.
Yeah. Nope, sorry.
Bad boy saves the world.
That's servers in Germany, CIA gun battle level.
Yeah.
Ben Hickson says, in Oz, major parties polled 33%, independent making other third. All Aussies vote major parties last to enact real change and consider liberal Democrats with freedom manifesto. Interesting.
I thought they meant Dr. Oz for a second, who's, you know, the guy who supports red flag laws, who talked about top surgery for seventh graders, who mocked heartbeat bills, and yet somehow is running around calling himself a conservative, even though to run in Pennsylvania, even though, of course, he's lived for 30 years in New Jersey.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to, with those opinions, he's got to wait like at least 5 years before he calls himself conservative.
Maybe six.
Yeah.
Maybe six.
Time's an illusion.
Steve says, we can really go back to the way it was if you're pushing 60 like me. Way better times when I was a kiddo. I would be terrified if I was a parent today. It's I think we romanticize the past. Cell phones are great.
Every generation, there's people think it's the end of the world. I would say it's common. It's not common throughout every person alive at that moment. It's very few people do it, but right now they have a megaphone. Don't get distracted by it. Don't get afraid. Stay brave, man. You're live. You're doing it. You're here with us now.
We had a draft during Vietnam. Think about that. We had an actual draft in this country where you were conscripted by the government, and there was a lottery system.
Yep.
With essentially you were given a number, and then you would turn on TV at night for your local lottery, and if your number came up, off you went.
Or in the morning. So my dad has told the story when he was in high school. On the morning announcements, they would play the radio segment announcing who in the area had their number pulled, like, so they would know who.
And they
would
read the numbers, and then you would just go.
And that was based on a false flag, the Gulf of Tonkin.
That's right. And it's crazy that people would just stand up and be like, "Oh, guess I'm going to go."
Democracy, right, guys? Democracy.
You understand that they did that on purpose? They put us into that war on purpose. They did that on purpose, and then they drafted people.
Yes.
Incroyable. All right. Raymond G. Stanley Jr. says, Ian, roll the dice while we wait, please. 1 through 100.
Here we go.
All right, Ian's going to roll that. I'm going to scroll down.
It's 74.
74, ain't not bad.
Big number.
All right. Grofty says, Bok, yay, you back. Grofty has been a generous supporter of Chicken City, keeping those chickens well-fed. Thank you very much. We now have, so Chicken City has sky eggs.
What are sky eggs?
They're these eggs that dispense treats, and they hang. And when you give $5 in different order, they will drop treats.
Oh.
So when every $100, a chicken party is triggered and like dance lights show up and a dance song happens and then the treats drop all randomly. The chickens are all running around.
Yeah, when they come running out of when they hear the music and they come running.
It's really funny when the music starts and they run from outside and they're like waddling like, ah, the food's coming. We heard the song. So they learned the chicken dance song.
I think I was watching it a little bit, and I think I saw Seamus actually running along with the chickens.
Yeah, you know, look, music. Every now and again, there's bread on the ground. A fella gets hungry. You just have to take the chances.
Hey, those are sky treats. Bark,
bark, bark. People don't realize that Seamus pecks the ground and eats the crumbs.
He does,
And also, you know, if a chicken gets in my way, I'm not above fighting it.
Hey, it's good exercise, too.
Murph Try says, Tim, please tell Brett I apologize for calling him Brent yesterday. Brent.
Thanks, Murph.
So, you know, Brett was here yesterday.
Yeah, right.
Super chat, he said Brent, and then Braxton, who was here, called him Brent as well because he thought he must have been wrong to call him Brett.
No, I called him Brett.
Yeah. Proto says people don't understand the plus part of the service. Get CNN for free every month, or get CNN Plus no Stelter for just $5 more.
No, that's CNN plus plus plus.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Stelter's on CNN Plus.
Yeah, he is.
Like you pay extra for him not to be on it. Yo, like nobody watches his show.
Good.
It's like, what's his ratings? Like 40,000.
His ratings are abysmal, and they say that John Malone, so who's the the lead investor, lead shareholder in Discovery, has said that, you know, he just thinks that that Stelter is just like a cancer on the company and wants to get rid of him.
Really?
But, 100%. But honestly, I mean, I think there's people who are on there. Brian Stelter has no influence. Brian Stelter has no impact. I mean, he's kind of just like a laughing clown, right? Everybody just jokes about that guy. He's a punchline.
Is he like a really nice guy in private?
Why is he so
popular over there?
What would you do if like the Discovery guys came to you, Jack, and they were like, we want you to run CNN and take it over?
I would ask for full carte blanche.
Yeah.
I would say, look, you know, you got to clean house. That's first and foremost. And so in Poland, when the Law and Justice Party, which is like the center-right party, won the control of the government in 2015, the first thing they did was essentially go to the Polish version of like the BBC, which they call TVP, and they just fired all the on-air talent, and they brought in conservatives to basically be the broadcasters of Poland. And, you know, essentially you'd have to do that with CNN. Or at least, you know, bring on people. So you'd have to have your news programs that were just straight news. And if you caught someone embellishing, you'd have to get rid of them. And then you could have multiple shows. You could go back, by the way, right? It wasn't that long ago that Alex Jones was going on CNN debating Piers Morgan. Mm. Or you would have Tucker Carlson sitting down with like James Carville or someone from the left, right? You can easily bring that back. And, you know, and you can have Don Lemon and Wolf Blitzer arguing about which black hole MH370 went through.
If CNN had Alex Jones and say...
Alex Jones went on The View.
I know. If they had Alex Jones and Rachel Maddow on the same show at the same time, they'd have like
mega ratings.
10 million.
Yeah. Mega ratings.
It's got to be long form. They should go long form too.
There's so many things there's so many things you could do with that. And everybody would want to watch it. It'd be way more interesting than boring politics all the time.
Don't give them ideas because, you know.
Well, we already kind of did that. Like, we had Rachel Maddow on with Jeremy Boring.
Yeah, we did. That's true. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, Rachel Maddow and Jeremy Boring discussing philosophy. Rachel, of course, is a conservative white man who
Sicilian man.
Who wrote a book called Speechless, Controlling.
No, here's something funny. So whenever a guest comes, we have our graphic artist, Jessica, draws a portrait of them.
Right.
And then they sign it. So for Michael Knowles, she actually made a Rachel Maddow photo and a Michael Knowles photo, and Michael only signed the Rachel Maddow
photo. So bad.
But all right.
It's a bone
strike. But did he write Rachel Maddow?
No, he wrote
Michael Knowles.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. But because we did it as a joke, like, here's your picture, and he signed it. And they're like, no, sign the real one, and I guess he forgot.
He got so distracted.
He was like, that's beneath me.
I guess on the wall of portraits we have here, we got to put up the Rachel Maddow one.
Right, you got to put that one out, yeah.
It's probably worth more money now, to be honest.
It's like the variant.
We'll get Rachel to sign Michael's.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. MJAC says, interested in what all of you, even my fellow Catholics, think of the dark MAGA movement. I don't know what that is. What is that?
No idea.
My guess.
I don't know.
Do you know anything?
Dark MAGA movement?
I've seen, yes. Raheem Kassam had a Substack up about this, and then Newsweek is attacking it now. And it's sort of this like, it's like this new take on MAGA, and it's the idea that, like, if basically it comes down to, if Trump comes back, it should be like a revenge mission.
Oh,
that, yeah. You know, and so all the aesthetics kind of, revolve around that.
Trump just shows up and he's wearing like a black trench coat and his eyes have like dark rings around his eyes.
Yeah, exactly. Bends the doors of the White House when he
walks through. Bends.
Well, no, the thing I was saying yesterday was, you saw that bit with, Joe Biden and the Easter Bunny. Coming off, and the Easter Bunny was like getting him out of there. And I was saying, well, the next logical step in that would be that the Easter Bunny pulls the mask off and underneath it's Trump and the crowd goes wild. How did he get in here? And, you know, JR's like, well, God, it's Trump. It's Trump.
I need a, Emperor Palpatine, but Trump.
Oh my gosh. It seems like, I feel like he looks more like Biden.
No. Come on. Give me do it.
The impression?
Yeah.
As Trump?
Trump as Emperor Palpatine.
This story of Dark Plagueis the Wise is the greatest.
No, I don't know. I know. So you want me to do Trump's voice? Like, first, quite frankly, it's a story CNN wouldn't tell you. Okay?
You gotta let the hate flow
through. You have to let the hate flow through you.
He's too dangerous to be left alive. I can't. It's not the Jedi way. Do it.
Your friends on the sanctuary moon.
I have the biggest lightsaber.
The most lightning.
Power.
This power station is quite operational.
I said, look, if you entered Ukraine airspace, we would use the Death Star, and 10% meant it. We may have used the Death Star if they went to Ukraine. It's possible.
Coruscant deserved it.
Does Coruscant actually get schwacked in the movie?
Yo,
not in the original.
Here's an idea.
No, in the new.
Oh, I don't know.
Coruscant?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he blows it up, right?
I don't remember.
Oh, that's jumping the shark.
Didn't he blow Coruscant up in the first one?
That was Alderaan.
Alderaan. Yeah, I'm pretty sure Coruscant gets blown up in the new one.
I guess. It's like a throwaway line. Like, oh yeah, we blew up the capital city and
Well, this time the Death Star's a planet and it doesn't fire one blast, it fires a bunch. And it's like, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Real original, guys. All right. Amber Black says Chicken City should sponsor H3H3. Done. Ethan, have your people call my people. Chicken City will absolutely sponsor one of your episodes.
Very
I am not kidding. Send me your rates. If they're reasonable, I mean, if they're like, we want some insane number, but if they legitimately are like, here's our normal rates, I'll be like, dude, we want the Chicken City commercial. We want the Chicken City shout out from Ethan Klein. I will take it. Chicken City is the most wholesome show, completely apolitical. It is just chickens eating treats.
Being chickens.
We're actually making kids cartoons. And I wrote the Chicken City theme song.
We also got the funniest, like, Adult Swim 2007 chicken cartoon. It's like 20 or 30 seconds, but it's a little too racy for Instagram, I think.
I'll just say that when Seamus and I were doing the VO, like, writing session on this, I ad-libbed a very, very, very dark. And then when I sent the VO to our animator, Kent, I was like, hey, don't make that one.
Yeah, I was like, I
will not do that. And then he sends me the clip, like, it has been made. Oh, and it's hilarious. No. I tried posting it on Instagram, but Instagram shadow banned it.
What was that show? It was like Adam Carolla was on it. He was a pig.
Oh my gosh, yeah, Drawn Together. That was Adam Carolla?
It was basically that kind of humor.
Yeah, that's what it reminds me of.
That show was actually
Drawn
pretty
Together,
wild.
Yeah. They made a movie,
good,
I think.
Good, I would say.
All right, we got JN who says, Magneto, Ian, watch Dr. Gene Kim talk about graphene regarding iron mixing with clay. McLeod, Seamus, can help him understand. Deuces. All right, Magneto and McLeod.
I appreciate the shout out. I don't understand the reference.
Is that a Highlander reference?
You know what? Send me a link on Twitter to the video you're talking about.
There can be only one.
Yeah.
Thank you.
There can be only one.
Only one.
Highlander. Man, what a show. Or movie. Or both. Whatever
it is.
Wasn't like the show, like every episode he killed the guy or something?
Because there can be only one.
It's so weird. Like, what, you just like go around killing everyone else?
Well, I know in the first movie they have this like huge epic drawn out Scottish Highlander battle in like a parking garage. And I think that in general we need to do more to be more grateful to parking garages for their contribution to the movies of the 1970s and 80s.
Yeah, it's got a lot of good lighting opportunities.
Like everything since Watergate had to be, everything was in a parking garage.
I thought the They Live had a great fight scene right outside of a parking garage.
Right outside of a parking garage. Right.
All right. Honda Driven says, hey guys, I love the show and just became a member. Thank you very much. Thoughts on Russell Brand's podcast yesterday about the Great Reset. If you've watched it, I haven't.
Oh, I gotta
but
watch
Russell
that.
Brand has been so hitting good. Grand slams lately, hasn't he?
His whole life.
he's actually really good in Death on the Nile. He's like probably the best part of that movie.
He's so good.
He's like a really, polyglot. Really excellent in that.
He's like a master. Like,
and he's not. Guy. It's not a comedic role either. It's like a very serious. Dramatic turn. And
I love
really
how they're smearing him. They're like, Russell Brand is now far right.
I was so glad he got serious in like 2011. He started taking stuff really seriously right around the time they were going to sell us out to the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Isn't that right when he and Katy Perry broke up?
Yeah, I think so.
Changes a man.
All right. Seven Ninja says, Tim, will you ever do more tech news on your main channel or maybe on a sub channel? For example, maybe there is news on development of geothermal energy. Well, what we're trying to do is make new shows, and we're also trying to figure out the right way to do it, because we want TimCast.com to be big, but also, does it make sense for people who are, you know, driven by culture and politics to, you know, see a story about a new cell phone? They might be like, so do we do a broad general website, or do we make like a network site, and each individual show has its own site with its own articles and stuff?
And like verticals.
Yeah. So, you know, I think we're at the point where we couldn't justify launching independent websites just yet, but we're probably going to get close to that. So there'll probably be, you know, TimCast.com, which is like this show and my YouTube show, and then a little bit of everything. But then we'll probably give independent sites. So we have been planning a tech show because we have a hackerspace that's barren and unused. We just need hackers to be in it. We have one of the best 3D printers money can buy, which is just sitting there unused. I'm disappointed. But, expansion is not easy. You know, man, we I don't want to say too much, but security stuff, like expanding all of that, it's brutal. It's brutal, man.
That being said, I do think I saw a headline on energy that something about the Biden administration was looking about at spending $7 billion on refurbishing nuclear sites in the U.S.
Well, you know, our economy's doing well. Why not?
Why not?
Just spend a whole lot of money.
Just print it. Yep. Keep printing.
It's a good idea.
All right. We'll grab one more. Skater Own Solution says, Tim, I'm down to my last dollars to give. Hope to catch your attention and get some advice on how I want to rebuild skate culture in the right direction. Please check out my story on the skateronowned.solutions website or someone on your team. We need people who can build ramps. So, you know, if you guys do ramp construction, we have a lot of stuff that has to get built.
Oh, yeah, and you can email us, spintheufo@gmail.com.
If you do ramp construction, send us photos of the work you've done, and we will hire you yesterday to do construction.
For your personal work, man, take a look at Brett Dasovic, because that dude is diligent. Every day he skates, and he makes videos, and he pushes it out, and he sells himself. And then Tim saw his work. So do that as well.
Well, actually, what happened was over the pandemic, rollerblading became way more popular because people started getting back into it. Sales started going up. And then I watched skateboarding videos. But because of the similarities, I started getting recommended roller skating and rollerblading, and that's actually how I found Brett. I saw this video where he was like doing a grind on like a wooden stump or something, and I was like, this dude's willing. He's like, he'll skate anything. And so I hit him up. I'm like, hey, come out and film, because we also had a scooter guy come out, a BMX guy come out. I was like, I want to get everybody to like, you know. And then Brett stuck around, and we got him on Pop Culture Crisis. So anyway, my friends, smash that like button, subscribe to this channel. Support the work we do at TimCast.com, because your membership isn't just about necessarily what the website has to offer. It does, but it's about the mission that we're building and trying to expand. So, you know, hopefully you believe in the work we do. And if you do, you want to keep it going. So that's what your membership gets. And you will get to watch the members only segment coming up at about 11 p.m. tonight. You can follow the show at TimCast IRL basically everywhere. Follow us on Instagram for clips. You can follow me at TimCast basically everywhere. Jack, you have a book.
Bipillow. Just would like to remind everyone to buy pillow. Every page of the book says Bipillow. No, seriously, check me out. Human Events Daily, wherever you get your podcasts. We are got a new tagline for the show. It's a podcast for people who don't like podcasts because it's 25 minutes, all the news, the analysis of the day, and our promise, our oath, our solemn vow to everyone, be good, be brief, be gone.
Right on.
Wonderful. I have a YouTube channel called Freedom Tunes. Please go over there. Check it out. I think you guys will enjoy it. We just released a cartoon today called The Democrats' Brilliant Midterm Strategy. I don't want to give away the punchline. It's very short, 30 seconds or so. I think you guys will really like
see where
it.
This is going.
Follow me, iancrossland.net, if you want to get in touch. And if you want to talk more about this Twisting Universe theory, please contact me on Minds or Twitter. Get involved. Very fun, very exciting future we have ahead of us. Bye.
Very cool. And I am also here in the corner. You guys may follow me on Twitter and minds.com @SarahPatchlets. I also have a SarahPatchlets.me.
All right, everybody, head over to timcast.com for that member segment, and we'll see you all there. Thanks for hanging out.
Bye, guys.